Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have got a real treat for you today. We are going to have another one of our Survivor 40 deep dives with the great Sophie Clark, and I'm so excited that she was up to do this, so we're all in for a treat here today. This is the audio version of the podcast. I don't have to tell you that what you're listening to. You're listening to a podcast, okay? But if you want to watch the video, you can check it out on our RHAP YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. This is going to be one in a long series of interviews that we've been doing. Started off with Kim, talked with Wendell on the Purple Pants podcast. We also got to chat with Adam Klein, with Ethan Zahn, Michelle Fitzgerald. Those are all up in our podcast feed at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. We're going to talk to Sophie here today, and then let's see what happens after this. I don't have anything else booked, but I will still be working on trying to line up more and more of these interviews here over these next couple of weeks. We've also got some really exciting stuff coming up in terms of Survivor podcasting coming up this weekend. It is the 20-year anniversary of Survivor, and Stephen Fishback and myself are going to be having a very special Survivor know-it-alls about the first episode of Survivor. That's going to be coming up on Sunday. And then on Monday, I will begin our series of Wiggle Room throwbacks where Josh Wiggler and I will discuss the very first episode of Survivor, and we will listen to your wand off. So make sure you still have some time to get those in by Monday morning at Wiggle Room at robhasawebsite.com. Plus, not to mention, Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast will be back as well this weekend. News AF. Plus, we'll have some Talking with T-Bird again for you soon. That's all at robhasawebsite.com. Quickly, a notice just to the person that writes up the recap of these interviews on Reddit. It wouldn't kill you to have a link to the interview also. Okay, just saying, some constructive criticism. All right, everybody, I'm very excited for this interview today because this was one of the people that I was the most looking forward to talking to about this for the last couple of months. She is a all-time great guest on Rob Has a Podcast. We've talked many times over the seasons. Of course, she is the winner of Survivor South Pacific. Please welcome the great Sophie Clark. Sophie, how are you?
I'm great. Rob, this is so fun. It's strange to be doing this in a different kind of context. I'm used to making fun of other people's games.
Did you find that any of the conversations that we had, was that productive before going back?
I mean, I think it's productive to like remain involved in the Survivor community. You look at like a lot of the old schoolers went first. And yeah. I think that's probably less about not getting the new game and more mm-hmm. just, you know, some of them may have drifted away a little far from Survivor today. So I think that was helpful. I definitely remember being a little stressed before I went out thinking, I don't feel like anybody should be threatened by me. I was almost like unknown of all the winners. Like I was one of the most under the radar winners of all time. But like all these winners are super fans. They all listen to Rob, and I have been on Rob multiple times. And so there was a fear that maybe my appearances on Rob Has a Podcast yeah. would like create kind of some kind of persona that I wouldn't be aware of.
In theory, Sophie, but in reality, of the other 19 cast members, how many of them are listening to podcasts that are like going or even going back yeah. in the archives and listening
Just
to podcasts?
Me and Adam.
Maybe you and Adam, like maybe Nick. It's a small number. It was not yeah. a big concern. Anyway. So nice to see you and so nice to get to talk about everything. I'm so glad that you were up for doing this because I really I think this season much more so than the first season that you played, that we really got to see you as a narrator of this season.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I have to say up front, like I was very happy with my edit this season, and I came home from the season, you know, really disappointed that I didn't win, but feeling like I played a great game. I was in the mix the entire time and feeling like, you know, I had a fun time and I did well. So it's been nice for me to see that like reflected on TV mm-hmm. and to have all my friends and family say, oh, like we see Sophie on TV. Like that's what you're like to play Monopoly against. Not that mm-hmm. I play a lot of Monopoly, yeah. but
or Risk.
Insert some other board game or Risk or something.
Yes.
And that was one of the disappointments I had of my first season, that I didn't necessarily feel like I saw the game that I played on TV. So that's, I mean, that's been really fun.
Do you feel like, were you the same in your confessionals in the first season and it was a editorial choice not to use it? Or do you feel like that you got better at like, okay, this is something that will make the show?
I think it's probably more of the latter. I'm sure there was some element of I was on a season with Coach and Ozzy and Cochran and the whole shebang. But I also think I've just matured a ton since I was on the show the first time. And I've had that feedback from producers as well, that I just seemed kind of more confident. And that leads, I think, to giving better confessionals, and like you're less inside your own head and you're able to kind of have more perspective on the situation. So I felt more mature when I was out there. I felt like less overwhelmed by the whole experience. And I think that means I was able to give better confessionals probably.
Sophie, I want to just go to the end of the game because I know so many people were worried about you when you missed
coming
that tribal
from the
council.
Dead.
Yes, yes. Were you okay?
I am fine. Yeah. I did not feel okay at the time. I think in the end, I mean, what the doctor, his perspective out there, which I think was right, was that a lot of the crew had gotten ill at the same time. I think about 40 of them had gotten the virus. And I honestly think I just got the same virus, but my body was not in a place where it could fight it off in 24 hours like everybody else did. So I basically had like 102 fever and was throwing up for about 5 days. They wheeled me onto the airplane to get home. And it was very sad because Bobby met me in LAX with like all of those things I'd asked for, hamburger and the
peanut butter cups. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I am not eating anything. And then I spent the entire flight home from LAX to JFK curled in the fetal position in the airplane bathroom, which is, I think, a good representation of how bad I felt.
Yeah,
I was
that sounds
very
terrible.
Sad to feel bad. Like, I always thought I would be a great juror, should I ever, God forbid, become a juror.
Yeah.
And I was perhaps the worst juror of all time. Like, not only did I not say anything, but I actively, like, glared at people as they asked questions because I wanted the questioning to stop and the voting to happen and, like, me to be wrapped in a blanket.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like, was there anything that you would have like represented at that final tribal council that you feel like that your other 15 jury members didn't get to?
Yeah, I mean, I think because the outcome turned out the way I wanted it to, like I felt strongly that Tony ran the game and deserved to win. I don't feel any huge regrets about being sick at the time.
Yeah.
So I think it was unnecessary. I would have advocated for Tony's game. But it seems like people did that well enough.
Yeah.
I probably would have also pulled a, what was the girl in your season? Heidi. I probably also would have pulled
yes,
a Heidi and tried, to get,
yeah. yes, yes.
and tried to get Tony to compliment me a little bit.
Good callback. Were you as a juror considering if it would have been Sarah there with Tony? It seemed like that you had the much closer relationship with Sarah during the game and you were up close to see what she was doing. Would you have voted Sarah over Tony if they were both in the final three?
You know, I think Sarah would have really had to convince me, mostly because when I got voted out by Tony, I felt like that was the turning point in the entire game.
Yes.
And that was Tony's move. Like, it was his singular move. And so it wasn't for me just like, oh, Tony made this one move that Sarah didn't. I felt like from that move, everything else happened because of it. So Sarah would have had to really convince me. But I think that other than Tony, Sarah definitely had like a very, very strong shot at getting my vote over anybody.
I'd love to go back and talk to you a little bit about your pregame preparation and conversations that you had. That I had the lovely experience. I felt like I was a fly on the wall of you and Kim were on Instagram Live talking about the experience, and Kim was doing great Kim things and asking you like all sorts of questions, and it was really very fun to watch. And you had some really interesting takeaways about the pre-gaming and sort of like the things that to be gained and lost by having those conversations. So can you just take us through a little bit of like what it was like for you to getting ready for this season?
I was stoked getting ready. I mean, to be ready getting excited for the season. So I got a call in like January saying like, you're on. It wasn't even like are you interested? Like, it was just, you're on. It was like the first call I got. So I got really excited and I did all the like normal, whatever preparations, like slide puzzles and all that crap. But I was definitely the most nervous about the pregame stuff.
Yeah.
I'd heard a lot of stories from different returnee seasons. I think about like Cochran's season and the thing that happened with Franny. I knew that pregaming was important, but I knew it was important, but that didn't necessarily mean that I should do it. I just knew that like whatever path I took was going to really matter. And I was really nervous about it. The advice Stephen gave me actually, which I think was the best advice I ever got, was, you know, don't do it actively. If people reach out to you, you know, obviously don't say no. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like it was this dance where I really didn't want a lot of people reaching out to me because I didn't want to have to then deal with it.
Right.
I got a lot of like, you know, Nick slid into my Twitter DMs with like a smiley face. You know, Michelle had a couple smiley faces my way. But I remember feeling definitely a little nervous. So for instance, I was really good friends with Parvati for a period in my life when she lived in New York, and I didn't hear a word from Parvati pregame. And so part of me was like, oh my God, is Parvati mad at me? Or maybe she's not going. I didn't reach out to her. And when I saw her in the hotel, I was like, oh, she's here. But that kind of speaks to, sorry, before I get into more into my pregaming, the one thing I will say about pregaming is I know there's like a lot of bitterness out there from people who got screwed over by pregaming. And like Parvati really got screwed over.
Yeah.
And I feel for it. But I also feel for people like Yul who did pregame a lot that it's, you know, they were going in like behind. You know, it's easy for people who have a ton of relationships to say, oh, nobody should pregame. Well, you've been pregaming for the last 10 years, you know, like that's pretty easy to say. So I definitely feel, I certainly pregame. I don't shame people who did. But I just think it's like important to know, to like think about how the game, especially when you think about Michelle and Yul's tribe, like how that all played out, I think was highly
Parvati got double whammy between the swapping into a group that had been talking, which was very unfortunate.
It was all interconnected. Yeah. So I talked to Yul pregame. You know, we had met a couple times in the past and were put in touch. And it was helpful to like know and have talked to Yul beforehand. My goal in pregaming was to just like say hello to people and make sure people knew that I was open to working with them. This is basically just Yul, other than the people I gave a smiley face back to. I think some people took it more serious. Like, I don't think it's a secret now that like Yul, Nick, and Michelle like all got on a conference call. Mm-hmm. That to me was like, I don't want to be that deep into it.
Yeah.
That feels like really dangerous.
Can I ask you a question, Sophie, about this?
Yeah.
Because I think that, like, I'm wondering, like, so you say, like, okay, so Nick sends you, like, a smiley face on a Twitter DM. Like, does that change your perception of Nick going into the game? Like, if Nick hadn't sent anything to you and you got to the, would you have thought any differently of Nick that he didn't reach out to you ahead of time? Like, was it 1% difference of, like, oh, I can work with Nick because he sent me a...
Not really, because I was so terrified. Like, I think that when you don't know something, you just, for me, I'm a catastrophizer. So I assume the worst and I assume that the catastrophe is going to happen. So when people like Nick reached out to me pregame, my assumption was, okay, like Nick and Wendell and Parvati have gotten together and they've said, this will be the craziest alliance that nobody would expect. And now it's like, have Sophie think that maybe she's with us and then we'll backstab her. Like in my mind, that would be just as likely as Nick smiling at me because he wants to work with me. So for me, I found other than Yul, who, because I'd met him before and I talked to him like a real human being, I felt confident that that was not a big sham.
Yeah.
Other people, like Sandra called me literally 2 days before we went out. And in my head, I was like, this means nothing. Like this means either she's trying to screw me or she wants to work with me, but honestly, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think that like pregaming is wrong per se. I feel like people know that it's going to happen and it's fair game, but I don't think it necessarily helps people.
I think it's also interesting the part you're talking about with like, okay, well, I knew Parvati, but I didn't call her. So I was worried. So I feel like that it's almost like if somebody was going to go back and play in another season, it's like if somebody's a total stranger, just leave it alone. You don't have to bother with them. But if you know somebody, it's good to sort of like have a check in and just say like, hey, like,
we're cool.
I'm not harboring animosity towards you after all these years. And it won't be weird when I see you there. So good to know.
For instance, I did not reach out to Tyson or Jeremy and they did not reach out to me. And I've met Tyson and Jeremy before, like at Steven's wedding. And I'd met Tyson a couple times before. And actually for me, it sounds crazy because like I also didn't reach out to them, but because they did not reach out to me, I definitely, when I met Tyson on the beach, felt like, I don't know, like maybe he would want to work with me. Maybe he wouldn't. Pre-gaming so I wish that they could just like cast a season and fly them out the day of.
Yeah, it does not sound fun at all.
Yeah.
Did it get worse when it got leaked? Hey, it's going to be all winners. Did that change at all, or everybody already knew?
I mean, I am an idiot. I certainly didn't know for sure. I thought most likely it was. Mm-hmm. I don't think it changed when it got leaked. I think my experience was as time went by, I felt like the like little messages I got became more and more frequent.
Yeah. Sophie, this season also, I think another part of your game, which we didn't really have a good understanding of before. I always knew you were an athlete. I can remember, you know, you talking about being like an intramural soccer and different things that you were doing. But I didn't know you were as much of an athlete as you turned out to be. Was that there in South Pacific and just forgotten about this?
I mean, I think in South Pacific, people didn't think of me as an athlete because I didn't look like an athlete. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been an athlete my entire life. Like I was, you know, I played varsity soccer since ninth grade. I was mm-hmm. the MVP of my league. I was recruited to play soccer in college, although had a big F up and ended up playing JV. Like mm-hmm. I was a pitcher for my softball team. Mm-hmm. I went to the Junior Olympics for freestyle skiing. Like my childhood I was more of an athlete than a nerd my entire life. So it's always been, I think, really lucky for me on Survivor that I am never seen as an athlete. Because I think the best thing is to be able to be competent in challenges and yet not be seen as being competent in challenges. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think I was lucky in South Pacific and other things with people. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little flabby.
Hey, that's good for Survivor.
Yeah,
that's perfect because, you know, you could be run out of gas on Survivor. Anyway, so coming into the game, were you when it was going to be men versus women? I think that this is like didn't get enough attention on the show. But it looked like they brought you guys in. It was going to be a tribe full of women. Would you have liked that?
Yes, I would have liked that.
I think they should have done that. I think that would have been cool.
You know, and there was a lot of kind of excitement that I felt like was brewing underneath the surface in the pregame out in Fiji of, especially I think because a lot of the female winners out there were like less big names than the male winners. And I think there was a lot of people out there who felt like they had something to prove, whether it be Michelle who felt like she had to prove her previous game or even Parvati who felt like she needed to prove that her games were great. And I think when you split it up men versus women, you get even more of that attitude of like, I'm good, we're better, we can do this. I think it would have been cool. I loved also all the pregame content of Natalie.
Yeah.
Just like assuming that it was all winners. That was my favorite part.
Yeah. Natalie was not locked in that week.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was still, you know, revving up the engine, getting ready to make her big push. By the way, if anybody's listening to the podcast version of this, that Sophie is outside. So you hear some random planes passing by, that there's not anything going on with the microphone. But it's a beautiful scene if you're watching the YouTube version of this. it's like you're at Ponderosa. Harmony.
Yeah, exactly. It is like I'm at Ponderosa. I try to set it up as survivory as possible.
Yeah.
I was excited to play with Parvati. I was excited to play with Kim. I was excited to play with Natalie. Like there was and also the women out there were strong, like really strong.
Yeah.
I think we could have given them a run for their money.
If they were ever going to do that again, this would have been the season to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. But you end up in this group at Tikal. Were you happy with this draw?
I was like beyond thrilled with the draw because I immediately looked at my tribe and Yule was on my tribe, which made me happy. I knew that Yule and Nick had talked before. So I was like, okay, well, maybe that will be something. I had met Tyson before and I really wanted to work with Kim. And I assumed before we started that like Kim and Tyson would probably work together. Mm-hmm. So there was like a bunch of little groups of people that I felt like I could work with. And then I also felt like we had enough kind of bigger targets on our tribe and people like, you know, Sandra and Tony. were we wrong about that? But anyway, so I was excited. And although my only worry was I thought we looked weaker. Like our tribe was shocked when we won the first immunity challenge, which is crazy because we ended up being much stronger than the other tribe. But I thought from the look of it, my only worry was that we were weaker.
Were you concerned about yourself at all being an early target?
Yes. I felt like if I could get my footing, I'd be okay. But I think I worry that in Survivor, it's all this like perception of threat, and particularly given what happened in Game Changers and even Heroes versus Villains, right? There's this history of kind of the more under the radar people winning the All-Stars seasons. So I was worried that if anything, that would be my problem. And people would say from the get-go, like, let's get rid of the hyenas or whatever the stupid lingo is. I thought that was going to be my biggest problem.
Did you feel like you were considered a hyena? I know you talked about yourself as that you talked about when you got voted out, you consider yourself a lower tier winner and you wanted to prove that you can, you know, run with the big dogs. But did you consider yourself to be one of the people that were considered a hyena?
Do you mean before the game or as the game?
No, as the game, like early on. Because I feel like that most of the time you were working with the Lions.
Yeah, I don't think I felt like I always kind of considered myself to be in the middle. Mm-hmm. I knew that like when people talked about like Nick and Michelle and Ben, I wasn't necessarily grouped in the same breath, but some of that was the alliances that were made. But I certainly knew that like I wasn't seen as like a parvati. Generally I was like annoyed with the whole lion and hyena talk, which I was not aware of those terminology that wasn't used. Yeah. I don't think to anybody's faces out there, but there was a lot of like threats, us big threats need to stick together. And it drove me mad because at some point it just felt like people who hadn't actually done that much in the game decided that because they had really big muscles, they were thus a threat to the win, which is fine. Like you can think of yourself in any way, but the problem on Survivor is like perception is reality. And the more people call themselves a threat and the more a group decides on these are threats and these are not, then the more likely it is those people who have been deemed threats, should they get to the end, they get to win. Mm-hmm. So I was annoyed with the whole thing.
Can you talk a little bit about the early days of Dekal and what you were observing at that time?
I think the edit was really accurate here. Nick, Wendell, Ewell, and myself got together really, really early. I also got together with kind of Tyson and Kim and Amber initially early. And I knew that, you know, Nick seemed to have a little relationship with Sandra on the side. So I very much felt like the edit was accurate and that the four of us were in the middle and did have the power to kind of decide which way to go each time. I was expecting us to bounce back and forth a little more. Of course, we didn't lose enough immunity challenges to do that. And there was this whole snafu with Tyson, which meant that, you know, we weren't able to bounce back and get Tony out, which was the initial plan. But I think that was really accurate that the four of us were in the middle. I felt like the whole pre-merge, I felt like I was playing both sides a lot more than I had to do post-merge when the lines became a little clearer. Mm-hmm. And pre-merge, I remember the tribal council, I think, where Tyson went home. I was having like a full-on panic attack because I felt like I was like flying too close to the sun. Like I was trying to work the Kim and Tyson side. Actually, it might have been the Amber tribal council. I was trying to work Kim and Tyson side while also trying to work like the Sandra and Ewell side. And I felt like it was just going to be a matter of time until we got caught. Like I remember one day going up to Sandra and be like, and saying, you know, Tyson said it's war, it's him against you. And then going up to Tyson and being like, Sandra said it's war, it's him against you. And I got caught one time doing that by Sandra, which caused a whole problem. But I just remember the whole time being like, I am flying way too close to the sun and this is all going to blow back in my
face.
Did
she blow that up when she caught you?
Yeah. So what happened was it was the challenge that we went and we just voted Amber out and we came back from the challenge and Sandra said to me and a couple other people in the water, like, did you see what Tyson did? And she said that at that challenge, when Rob was seeing that Amber was voted out, that Tyson caught Rob's eye and like pointed at the people in the tribe who had voted out Amber, which actually I think in retrospect was not true. And I decided
it was not true that it happened or it was not true that he got the wrong people.
I think it was not true that it happened. Okay. I think she totally made it up. So I, in my like playing both sides and trying to keep, my goal was to, like keep those big two sides, like the Tyson and Kim side versus the Sandra and Tony side. I wanted them to keep going at each other so they didn't look at us. So I was like fostering, you know, hate between the two. So I immediately went to Tyson and I said, you know what Sandra said about you? Like she said that you're pointing at everybody, blah, blah. But the problem was around the time that Tyson decided that maybe there was these middle people that had to go.
Yeah.
And so Tyson went back to Sandra and said, I heard you were saying this about me. And it was like, I was the only person who could have told Tyson. So then Sandra confronted me about it. And then I felt like I had to like grovel to Sandra for a while. But that was like, I remember that moment when Sandra said, I know you told Tyson. We're like, oh shit, my whole, like the whole thing is gone. And that, I mean, that day when Tyson started targeting the four people in the middle was definitely the scariest day. And I think in many ways, like it was a huge, it changed the game big time. Cause I think if Tyson hadn't done that, he wouldn't have gone next. I think it would have at least, but I have to do a caveat, which is like, this is my own perception of the game. I could be totally wrong.
Right.
Like,
right.
Possible that Yul and Nick would have never voted out Tony. My perception at the time was that if Tyson hadn't done that, we would have swapped, like flipped over and voted out Tony next.
Okay. So if you're saying if Tyson didn't try to target the people who were the lesser threats, that the lesser threats would have voted out Tony.
Yeah. Because our idea was like, let's not let either side get too big. It'd be great if we could come from this merge unscathed as the four, but also having kind of like, you know, hit both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talked about in the first episode, I think you said that Sandra and Tony and Sarah, they played in Game Changers together. They were like this gritty group. And I think that we just ran with that. Was that actually an alliance of three? Was Sandra with those guys early on? Because then I've also seen where, Sandra was really working with Yul from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, my perception definitely was that Sandra was with Tony and Sarah. I know that Sandra and Sarah talked before the game. So I think that was like a real alliance. I know that Tony was shocked when Sandra was willing to have him go at the swap. So I think that was a true alliance, but I think there was this separate Yul Sandra thing that I was not aware of. And I think almost nobody was aware of that was also happening.
Did you have a horse in the race in voting out Amber? Was that your pick to go home?
So we had, it definitely was landing on that side, the Tyson, Amber, Kim side. It was initially going to be Tyson. I honestly don't remember having a strong opinion at the time. I think I probably would have been happier with Amber because I felt like Tyson and I, because we'd met before, had a relationship that we could use. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember. I also like the worst memory of all time. So I'm cobbling this together.
What was the fear with Amber? That it's just that she's going to connect with Rob at some point, and then that's going to be it.
I don't even know if it was fear as much as like you have to send somebody home, and there was a lot of reasons why Amber made sense. It was easy. Nobody really was going to stick their neck out for Amber. She wasn't the strongest, going to be the strongest in the challenges. That was part of the problem with voting against Tyson at the time. The Rob thing also made sense. You almost want to have like an excuse so that after we voted out Amber, I felt like I was able to keep my relationship with Kim and Tyson because it was kind of understandable. Like, well, we had to vote out Amber because of Rob, and it enabled like those tribal lines, I felt like, to be less strong, right? If we had voted out, I don't know. I mean, I guess you can make an excuse for anybody, but Tony, Sandra and Sarah might've felt more ostracized than maybe Kim and Tyson did. Mm-hmm. Although I think that people felt ostracized anyway.
Was the Sandra versus the Marianos stuff, was that like public knowledge in the camp that Sandra is mad because Rob didn't tell her that he was going to be back out there?
Yeah.
Sandra
was talking about that from day one. Like, okay. I definitely remember getting to the swap and having like, you know, having it out with Rob about things that Sandra had said about him. And he was like, I know Sandra's poisoned the well and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that was talked about immediately.
Yeah. Was there any confrontation between Amber and Sandra, or Sandra just like was not going to have anything to do with her?
No, there wasn't. And to this day, I don't know how, I assume Amber knew she was going home, but I think she hoped she wasn't.
Yeah.
But she wasn't the kind of player who was going to like cause like huge fires on her way out. So I think there was no opportunity for them to have at it.
Yeah. Now, there's only one degree of separation now between us, Sophie, and Survivor player that you've played with Rob and Amber, just like me.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think there's one degree of separation for probably like everybody. Hasn't Rob played like 30 times?
I think so. So then we are going to have a lot of time at Dekal, where this actually seemed like it was a very fun group that you guys didn't get a ton of airtime in the episodes because other than Tony's ladder. But there were some really great secret scenes from that time. It seemed like that Jolia had posted like this was the most fun group that I had been around. That seemed like that was a really fun tribe.
that's the most fun I've ever had on Survivor. I mean, it tells you that, like, as bad as starving is, voting out the people is what causes the real stress in a tribe. I mean, like, we were catching shark, we were building ladders. Like, Sarah and I hiked to the top of the mountain twice.
Yeah.
You know, Kim and I would make these, like, fancy dishes with all of our, like, wonderful spices. Tyson and Tony were, like, a two-man show on the comedy set. Like, it was so, so fun. And it felt like the way a winter season should feel. Like, we should all be having a lot of fun. I also felt like that was the time in my game where I became really close to Kim. And yes, probably to a lesser extent at that point, Sarah, but still close to Sarah. And I remember at that point thinking, like, all of the relationships in the tribe are so good right now. You know, like, Survivor is all about, like, you want everybody to feel comfortable. If you feel comfortable, because then it's like, and you just want, like, life to pause like that. And so it felt like that happened for a little bit. And it was a little bit of, probably part of the reason everybody was being so fun was nobody wanted the drama to start up again, because should we come to a swap, like, this is the ideal way to enter a swap with everybody on the tribe kind of loving each other.
Yeah. At this point, Kim is going to find her idol. She has to give half of it to somebody. She gives half of it to you.
To the devil.
Yes. You, in confessional, chastised Kim. You said, why would you give it to me? Why wouldn't you give it to Tyson? This wasn't such a good idea because, you know, I'm not going to protect you. But I think the relationship with you and Kim is so interesting in the game, because it seems like that Kim really tries to make, overtures to you to try to, get you to consider working with her. But you, I think, have up a wall. And you're nervous. And you guys talked about this at Ponderosa about, you know, I was afraid. I didn't want to. You had told her at Ponderosa that, you know, I didn't want to let you in because I didn't want to that. I thought that maybe this was a trick. I thought you were trying to. I don't want to be the person that gets duped by Kim Spradlin.
Yeah. And, you know, I think back to my game and I think, what are the things that I wish I'd done differently? And, like, obviously there's, like, the idol and the split vote. But there was a number of situations where I think I catastrophized, and instead of just accepting Kim, and I talked about this a lot in confessionals, instead of just accepting Kim for what she was, which was somebody who wanted to work with me, somebody who wanted to be my friend. And somebody who was a great player, but not, like, the biggest evil mastermind of all time, I catastrophized. And I was like, Kim is the most amazing social player. I saw what she did in season 24. Like, how do I know that she's basically not, like, hypnotizing me personally here? And so I think in some ways, me keeping my guard up with people like Kim and even Denise actually in the game really served me, because I think I was able to, like, not, I made sure I wasn't getting duped all the time. I was so worried about that. But I think it also prevented me from forming, like, some really, really close relationships with a few people that could have been really helpful later on. And I was always so nervous about Kim, and you didn't see it on the show, but, like, Kim was, like, one of my top allies. And you saw some of the nervous, like, the stuff about the idol, but not sure about working with her. But we were very, very close, and we shared, like, everything that was going on all the time. But just, I always had in the back of my head, like, oh my God, I can't, like, she's going to screw me over. I have to screw her over before she screws me over.
Yeah. Well, I definitely could relate to the thing about, like, okay, oh, you know, this is it. This is, she's being nice to me. She doesn't really like me. This person, they just want something. So I definitely feel like that. Yes, of course, I'm falling for it.
Yes. And also, like, you know, it's one thing to wonder if, I don't know, some rando is doing that, but, like, Kim is just, like, the coolest person ever. Like, Kim is just, of all the humans who went on Survivor season 40, like, Kim is the best human. And so I felt a little bit like, like, why does the best human want to, like, be allies with me? Like, this feels like there shouldn't be any reason unless this is fake, which is also just very representative of inner insecurities. But, you know, in that way, like, it was easier for me to trust Sarah than Kim.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, this in the season of Winners at War, you know, there is so much like exceptionalism, and you know, and Kim has her superpower, and you have your superpowers, and you know, Sarah has her superpowers, yeah. and Tony has his superpowers, and they're all different. It's so interesting to have them mesh. Why did you feel more comfortable with Sarah, who that at least the perception of her is almost like the thing that you're afraid of with Kim? Where she sucks you in, and I feel like that Kim has less of a track record of really turning on somebody as opposed to Sarah.
Insanity. It's total insanity. I think probably there was an element of feeling like if I'm going to go up against somebody at the end, Sarah felt more different than me. Than Kim did.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that was an easier ally to think about going through the game with long term.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, Sarah is not as charming as Kim. I think charm terrifies me because I'm like, what is underneath this? And Sarah felt like she was not more real, but I felt like I saw her flaws a lot, which made it easier to be allied with her. And Sarah's, I mean, this is probably not saying this well because it's probably discounting Sarah. Sarah forms like the most incredible relationships on Survivor. Yeah. I've only recently heard about some of the stuff she did on Game Changers relationship wise. But like Sarah is a great, great friend, and she's fun and she's funny and she's fun to hang out with. And she gets really, really close with people really quickly. And I don't want to say I fell for that because Sarah's a friend and I think she was a friend out there and a friend after the game, but like that is her super strength.
Mm-hmm.
So probably my alliance with Sarah and my decision to be closer with Sarah than I was with Kim probably was more Sarah's decision than mine.
Yeah. It's interesting just to compare the two of Sarah and Kim because they're able to do a lot of the same things, but that Kim almost does it in a presentation that's almost too perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where's the flaw? What's the catch? Yeah. What's the catch?
I also think that, you know, Kim struggled because that was her reputation.
Yeah.
Whereas that was not Sarah's reputation. So when Sarah did it, it felt more authentic, right? I was able to believe it more because in my back of my head, I didn't have like, Sarah's the best social player of all time. Be careful. I had like, you know, Sarah is really sneaky and strategic.
Yeah.
And so because it didn't line up with my perception, I was like, oh, this is a real friendship.
Because Sarah was, I believe, the person that you wrote down, right? When Dalton Ross asked you, who would you vote out first? It was Sarah. And that's what I think what was so impressive about Sarah this season was that there was a bunch of people that did that.
Yeah. But, you know, Sarah has such a great read on people. You know, one of the first things she said to me when she took me aside very early on in the game was, like, you probably wrote me down to vote out first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, like, when Dalton Ross asked me who I wanted to work with, I said you. And I know that you don't think we're going to work together, and I know that you don't think we're going to be friends, but I think we're really alike. And there's something, like, very, that puts you very off guard when somebody, like, pegs you for what you think and then tells you that you're wrong. Like, it starts, mm-hmm. it makes you wonder. She's good.
Yeah. That is a good move. Did that come up a lot on the beach of, like, who did you write down on, they said, who you're going to vote out first?
Really only with Sarah, we talked about it. Although there definitely was, in the first day, there was a little bit of an anti-Sarah movement mm-hmm. for a hot, like, hour. And I think it was stemming from that pregame kind of, let's all get Sarah out. I think there was a moment when Kim went to Sarah and said, like, hey, we have a really good tribe. Are you really excited about it? I'm really excited about it. And Sarah, I think, didn't respond in a super effusive way.
Yeah.
That my recollection is that threw Kim off guard and she told me about it. And I was like, well, if Sarah doesn't want to be on this tribe. But so I think Sarah very quickly, you know, got over that hump.
Yeah. So leading up to Tyson getting voted out, you talked about how that there was maybe some talk about Tony, that it looked like from what we saw on television that Tony was just from the jump, everybody was loving what Tony was doing. Is that not quite the reality on the beach?
No, everybody was. I mean, Tony was fun. Tony was much funnier than I ever expected him to be. I expected him to be more like crazy annoying, and he was crazy funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has a very dry sense of humor. The moment when he's putting the ladder up and he tells us all he designed it that way, it's just like classic Tony humor. So I think he did a really good job of forming relationships, but I mean, my eye was still on Tony from from the beginning. And mostly because I felt like I had a relationship with Sarah, so I didn't want Sarah gone. And out of Tony, Sandra, and Sarah, I felt like Tony was the most threatening. He also definitely, while he laid low, before votes, he went crazy. And I think you saw that a bit. I think Amber accused him of that in her tribal council. Like, he would be chill, and then he would be... And in retrospect, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, that I feel like Tony did a good job of kind of lulling us all to sleep on his way he played his game, because he would be chill Tony, and then he would run around. He would get away with it, and he'd be chill Tony, and then he'd run around. And by the time he voted me out, he was doing some crazy things. And I feel like in my head, I was like, yeah, but that's just Tony. Because he'd been doing those crazy things without causing trouble for so long.
Yeah.
He kind of made us a little all lulled to it, at least me.
Yeah. Was there any debate at the time Tyson went home that it had just gotten back to you guys that Tyson wanted to target the people who didn't have a lot of connections and you guys were all on board with it?
It had gotten back to us. I strongly wanted it to be the non-Tyson side. I think the problem was I think the problem probably was Yule and Sandra's relationship that they didn't know about. But once it got him back to us, what Tyson was doing, and the fact that the people who had told us were the Sandra side, I felt like I at least went into a bit of a self-preservation mode of, okay, well, I'm not going to get my ideal situation here, but I at least need to avoid the catastrophe, which is going after the four of us. And so I was more than happy to, you know, jump onto the Tyson boot.
Yeah. Was there any discussion of, was that a throw of the challenge? This has been a question of mine all season. When the challenge, it looked like that Nick and Sarah, a puzzle that Nick had done before, and they had it almost completed. They ended up taking the whole thing apart. The other tribe comes all the way back. Was there any sense that that was a throw of the challenge?
That was so painful. No.
Not a throw.
No, I mean, this is coming. I don't think it's a threat. Did Adam say it? No, Adam didn't do it.
No.
Ask Nick and Sarah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is coming off the back of us all having this like happy-go-lucky week. And I truly think most people in the tribe felt like not confident enough in their positions that they would want to go to tribal council, and feeling like if we went into a swap, you know, better to have more numbers. I would be shocked if it was a throw. They'd be great actors.
Yeah. Okay. I loved it at that tribal council where then, you know, Nick was talking about how, hey, everybody, I just want to let you know, if we swap, I'm sticking with this group. I'm not voting any of you guys out. And you were just like, yeah, same for me.
Yeah.
It's great. You had a lot of really great tribal council moments too, over the course of the season.
Yeah. Tribal's where I shine, you know, I like a stage.
Yeah. No, it was very good. did you enjoy Tribal Council? I feel like that I would enjoy like sitting at Tribal Council and being... Because I feel like that Tribal Council is kind of like a podcast. It's like you're on a panel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I feel like it's always fun. I don't know. I mean, this is like outside of Survivor, but I always find it fun to say things, to think about like what is a way you can say something in a more interesting way. And I feel like tribal is all about like getting to like package your game and decide like how you tell the story of it.
Yeah.
And I do think there's still like this kind of silent signaling that happens at tribal council that matters. And that's like a fun kind of quiet part of the game that matters.
Okay. Let's talk about another quiet part of the game when you went to Yara with, you got swapped with Sarah, and now you're here with Adam and Ben and Boston Rob. And Boston Rob is going to try to tell you guys, hey, no more discussion. We're not talking about this. We got buddy system going on here, and you're part of that. But going into that swap, you guys are down in the numbers. Was there panic on your sense?
Oh, yeah. I was so scared and I was pissed because I felt like we'd done so much to win all these challenges. I'd played a big role and now I'm the one who gets swapped onto the minority tribe. And with, you know, I didn't think our minority tribe necessarily looked like the strongest tribe. So like maybe it's a minority tribe that's not going to lose. I was definitely pissed and very worried. At least I was with Sarah, who I felt like I was close with, although we really became much, much closer at Yara.
Right.
I, though, immediately started to feel better when we, like, landed on the beach. I mean, within 2 seconds, I had Ben winking at me. But again, like, I went to the catastrophe mode and was like, oh, my God, Ben is, like, doing this long con. I don't know why he needs to do this. Like, we're in the minority anyway. Like, he was doing these over-the-top, like,
yeah,
like, you're fine. But we did realize pretty quickly, like usually I think on a swap tribe, you're like, where's the crack? Where's the crack? Where's the crack? And on this tribe, I mean, it was, you know, like the pavement was destroyed.
Yeah.
It was, they all hated each other. They all had things to say about each other. I honestly couldn't even follow the description of the vote that had happened with Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So I think pretty quickly it became clear that like there was going to be opportunity and it was kind of a matter of where we were going to go. And I felt like, I mean, this is skipping ahead slightly. Rob was going to go home. We talked about it days beforehand. It still was exciting and it felt like an old like shoot 'em up movie. And,
yeah.
You know, because we really didn't talk that day. So while we had made the plan, you know, staring, like not being able to do that confirmation was still scary.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder what would have happened if Ross and Rob had taken a different tactic and not done that. Because between me and Sarah, he wanted to vote for Sarah. And I felt pretty confident that he was going after Sarah and not me. And one of the first things Rob said to me when we got to the beach was, Parvati told me if I'm swapped with you, that you guys are friends and that you'd work with me. Which I thought was like a pretty believable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt at the time, like if I wanted to, Rob would be an option and I could go with Rob. And I had the sense that Adam was open to it as well. And we talked post-game and he was.
And he was.
I don't think it would have, I don't think that would have happened in the end, particularly because I found my idol and I shared it with Sarah. And I think I think I would have not wanted to vote out Sarah, and I'm not sure Adam would have gone for Ben.
No, I think he wanted to talk to you about would you be open, but you know, he said because Rob shut everything down, then he wanted to go have a conversation with you. Would you be open to potentially? And I think it was Ben. I wasn't sure. I'm not 100% sure if he said Ben or Sarah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if things would have changed, but that is a place in the game where I think things potentially could have turned out different. The thing for me was that Sarah and Ben became pretty close and I became pretty close with Ben. So I felt like that was such a strong three, whereas going with Adam and Rob would have definitely shaken things up, but it was like a less certain path.
You know, I would love to hear a little bit more about your experience with Ben, because it sounds like that you hit it off very quickly with him. He talked about, I think in his Ponderosa, that he made, well, I believe he said lifelong friends in, I think he said Denise, Sarah, and Sophie, and that it was just from the other people that I've spoken to about the game. They felt like that I had a little to no relationship with Ben. It seems like a very different story, and it seems like that this was like a very instant connection that you had with Ben.
Ben and I got really close. I love Ben. I think my relationship with Ben is probably where I am the most, or Ben is like where I am the most confused about both the public perception of Ben and other people's perception of Ben, because my perception of Ben was always that he was like a super nice guy, really funny, really kind, a great worker around camp, a great ally, and a really like strong player. Like I personally would have potentially voted for Ben. I would have voted for Ben depending on who he was at the end. And I know a lot of people felt like, and maybe because I don't really remember Ben's season that well and didn't really read much about it, but like the idea that Ben was in the hyena group to me didn't make much sense. Ben and I just like, we bonded very, very quickly. I think we just are very alike in many ways. I really owe Ben a phone call now that I'm saying this.
I've always enjoyed talking to him. I think he's a very fun guy. I wonder.
He's such a goofball.
Yeah,
like, how people can dislike Ben is crazy to me.
I wonder maybe if there's like a disconnect where if you're not on the same, and you were working with him the whole time, you were not on like that. Does he have like a switch of like, okay, well, if this person is my friend or they're not, or they're my enemy. And if they're my enemy, then I'm not going to engage with them on any level. And then if they're my friend, I'm going to have this, you know, incredible relationship with them.
Yes, I think that's probably right. Like even just seeing how he and Adam's relationship, you know, turned out, I think that's right.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, the people who know Ben
and flipped very
Ben
quickly.
And flipped, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Ben. And I mean, that's also why, you know, Adam and I bonded on Yara and I formed an alliance with Adam. But in my head, you know, it was never quite real because I knew that I was so much closer with Ben and Sarah. And I was hopeful that we'd get out of Yara with Adam still alive so that we could have a relationship and emerge.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, because I loved Ben so much and felt like I didn't feel like Ben, you know, part of it is that like, I think Ben and Sarah in many ways reminded me of my alliance on South Pacific. I think they have a lot of
Rancher Rick
qualities. Yeah. Rancher Rick. And like, you know, part of the way I won South Pacific was aligning with people who have some level of like morality in the game and loyalty. And I think for me, I really felt like Ben and Sarah were not going to vote me out. I felt like there was some element of like blue collar trust that they had formed and they had formed with me that was going to last. And that's like what did me well in South Pacific. And I think it's what could have done me well in this game too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think part of the reason also I gravitated towards Ben.
Can you go back to the vote with Rob? Because it seemed like you did not enjoy your time on the beach with Rob.
I think I called him an asshole.
You did. Yeah.
This is hard, right? Because like it was, I'm trying to be super diplomatic here. It was also a very, like I was put into this minority position. Rob was the kingpin and acting like the kingpin. And I was being like a little brat, like, you know, you're not going to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. So there was, I mean, Rob and I didn't butt heads publicly. I think publicly we had a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely participated in the vilification of Rob, which I think happened not only when Rob was there, but for a long time after Rob left. And for me, this was, I mean, partially fun and real in that, like, he tried to tell us all what to do. And, like, isn't that funny that, like, he got his comeuppance? And partially, like, on Survivor, it's always good to, like, bond with people over your hatred of somebody else. And for a long time on Yara, it was, like, me, Sarah, and Ben being like, you know, screw Rob, blah, blah, blah. And I do think that was a big part that got me, Ben, and Sarah bonded together. And the fact that even Adam sometimes wouldn't participate and would say like, oh, come on, guys. Like, that's, you know, one thing that like ostracized Adam slightly. So there was definitely an element of like, you know, we dethroned the king. And then, I mean, Rob will say this, but like, I got really so... My whole mentality before I went out into the game was like, there's 20 people, 19 are going to lose. I'm probably going to lose. It'd be great if I didn't, but I want to get something out of this experience that is not $2 million or $1 million. Because I want to be happy with the fact that I went out there. So I had this whole like secondary goal, like life goal when I was out there of trying to be happy every single day, which for me, my first season was not the case. Like I felt like I was really miserable. I cried a lot in my first season. The hunger got to me, the starvation got to me. And so on this season, I really tried to like actively have a good attitude and actively like in my confessionals. And when I woke up in the morning, thought about like, how is this? This is fun. Like this, if I tell myself this is fun, this is fun. Kind of in the way that you like smile at yourself in the mirror, you're in a good mood. And so I was doing this throughout the entire season. Like I'm going to have fun on this season. I'm starving. I'm miserable. I'm having fun. And I truly think because I had that mindset, I had more fun. Well, Rob, I think had a little bit more of a, I've done this six times. I don't need to have fun. Like this sucks kind of mindset. Mm-hmm. And he would sing this song every day, which was the plane song.
The plane song.
He and Sandra, I think invented it on season 39. And every morning he would insist on singing the song and it was, 29 days till plane day, 29 days till plane day, 29 days till we're on that fucking plane.
Yeah.
He would sing this every single day. And the Edge people would all sing it every day. Mm-hmm. And for me, I like couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand it because it was like totally antithetical to my whole thing of like, I'm going to be in a good attitude. And I probably should have just like, you know, sang the fucking song. But the first day that we were there and Rob was like, I want to teach you the song that I'm singing every day. I was like, yeah, actually, I'd rather not. Like, I'm trying to be positive about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that was like a little irky
and you
thing.
Prayed with Coach, but you wouldn't sing Rob's plane song.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference in my personality between being 21 and 30. I finally can put my foot down about some things. There was a very kind, nice moment on the Edge when I was really pissed because the Edge makes everybody piss when I chimed in for the song. And
you came around eventually on the plane song. And then you knew that that plane ride was not going to be all it was cracked up to be because it was miserable.
Exactly.
Yeah. The plane ride was worse than whatever was going on Survivor. So then you find the idol also at this point. I'm trying to remember. Did you find the idol in South Pacific? I know there was the time that you weren't with Coach when they found the idol.
I was the distracting team.
Okay. Okay. What was that like finding the idol for the first time?
I mean, it was so fun, both because like in my effort to have fun in the season, I told myself there's like a lot of ways that you can have victories in Survivor that are not winning, like finding idols, having fun backstabs, like making good alliances. So for me, that felt like one more proof that I was having a good time on Survivor, no matter what that would lead to. So I was happy about that. And then also like I'm on a minority tribe, like as much as we think Rob's going home, like this is the perfect time to find the idol. So I was over the moon. It was a very strange way to hit the idols this season, I felt. Like, I think I was just really lucky. Like, we were all looking for a long time, but I think traditionally the idols have been kind of in holes of trees or underneath a rock or, like, in these kind of places that you would think to look. And both mine and Kim's idol, I know, were, like, literally sitting at the base of a tree underneath some leaves. And there are thousands of trees that you could be kicking the leaves up of. And so I feel like I kind of got rewarded for being a slightly lazy looker. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Rob and Ben are, like, climbing these trees, like, shaking things down. And I'm kind of, like, wandering around, like, kind of half-heartedly, like, kicking at the ground. And I kicked at this tree, and there was the idol there. It was really fun. I like immediately, you know, I was asked to do a confessional. I was freaking out. So I like shoved it into my crotch and like Rob immediately came around the corner.
Yeah.
But you know, I definitely remember after that, the idol just gives you so much confidence in the same way that immunity necklace gives you confidence. After I found the idol, like within 20 minutes, that was when I first approached Adam with what I thought was like a really genuine, authentic, like, I really want to work with you. And that was kind of the beginning of Adam and I's relationship. And I feel like it was the high that I got off the idol where I was like, okay, now I'm going to have an alliance.
I can do anything.
Yeah, I can do anything.
When you first found the idol, it looked like in the episode, you find the idol and then it's on your person. And then Boston Rob is like, I forget if Boston Rob is like immediately, hey, everybody, empty your pockets.
And
it seemed like that you just like dropped trow as opposed to empty your pockets.
I searched with them for like a full another hour after I found the idol. Like I didn't even open the idol up. I found it, I put it in my crotch and I kept searching. And I remember being terrified when Rob said to empty our pockets, and I emptied the pockets, but I kind of like, I was dramatic about like pulling my shorts around. I mean, luckily, like if he had said, drop your shorts, that would have been a disaster. There was a moment too on the beach when like Sarah was like, oh, I'll empty our bags. And I'm like, Sarah, don't say that. Like, we're not emptying our bags today.
I want to go back to when you're talking about how the conscious decision you made to enjoy this experience and trying to find the little victories along the way over the course of 39 days. Is that something that you normally do in your everyday life? Or was this something that you were trying on for Survivor?
You know what? It's something I'm trying on for Survivor, but now that you ask me that, it makes me wonder about taking more of that mindset in my everyday life. I mean, I think for me, Survivor, like, you know, similar to Michelle, like there were parts of the experience that were obviously amazing. Thank you, CBS, for $1 million, but parts that were really, really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely was fearful about coming into the season and like, let alone the season itself, but like later down the road being torn apart by the internet. And so I knew that like I had to have a different mindset to kind of withstand the whole thing.
Because it's something that I definitely identify with in terms of like, I remember like when I was first going through casting for going on one of these shows, and it was for Big Brother. I just remember being like, oh, I'll be on the live feeds every day and I'm going to be like my best self, that this is going to be, I'm going to be light. I'm going to be alive that day. And because I'm going to be on filmed and on the show. And then, you know, it's just not something like I take with me in my everyday life of just I guess getting to do the podcast is for an hour or two, I get that, but just like I think that the act of being filmed, though, for some reason I feel like that sort of, that does bring it out of me,
your best self. I remember I had, the only place I did not succeed was I was really scared of the edge of extinction, and I was scared that I wasn't going to be able to have that attitude when I got there. And I think it was definitely a lot harder. And I remember telling myself, like, you're going to make a routine. You're going to like you know, walk and get rice in the morning, and then you're going to spend an hour doing yoga. And then, like, as long as you, like, give yourself a daily schedule, and you're going to spend an hour talking about food, and then you'll do 10 push-ups, and that will be something you've done that. And it was just like, when I got to the edge, I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah. Well, they prepared you when you were in high school, and they brought you to the jail to see what it was like, to scare you straight. Did that really happen?
Yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from upstate New York. There's a lot that happens there.
Okay. At Yara, and I got into this with Adam when I talked to him about, there was a lot of talk about Adam was convinced that Sarah had the idol and felt like that Sarah had given half of the idol to Ben, and that's why they were so close. And you were his confidant.
I was cultivating that. Adam, I'm pretty sure I saw Sarah, like, you know, slip something to him yesterday in the woods. I was cultivating that big time. I mean, for me, ideally, I was going to be able to leave Yara and feel really close to Sarah Ben and feel really close to Adam. Like, I definitely played up with Adam that I thought they were going to vote me out, which of course they were telling Adam they were going to do. I was trying to play up that, like, you know, what were we going to do? They had the idol. We had no options. And Adam kept saying, I think we have options. And that was him, like, I think planning to potentially go to Rocks. So I definitely,
Adam would have gone to Rocks for you.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, my goal was to be able to leave with that relationship. And I remember being really mad at Ben and Sarah one day because I was playing both sides. And I told Ben and Sarah, like, I have a relationship with Adam. Guys, it's going to be really important when the merge. We got to keep Adam with us. And I think they just, I mean, part of it is fair, right? Like, what's it to them that, like, I get to have a close relationship with Adam? Like, that's really just helping me. But I was trying to say, like, this is all for us. Like, if, you know, if I get to have a relationship with Adam, like, we're all four together. And I remember the day that there was one day in particular where I told Ben and Sarah, but I was telling them, like, everything, you know, that Adam had mentioned that morning about the idol. And it just set Ben off, like, something about it that day. He couldn't handle it. And he and Sarah, like, ripped Adam a new one, which pissed me off so much because I'm like, guys, like, there's only one other person on this tribe who could have told you that. Like, this is just throwing me under the bus. And so I think that there's a little bit of, like, you know, Ben and Sarah's volatility there that you see that, like, I think it would have been better for all of us if they had not said anything and we'd been able to keep Adam as a number at the merge. But I remember feeling, I think part of actually Adam and I stayed close at the merge, but actually not as close as we could have. And I think part of the problem was that I actually thought that Adam didn't trust me after that moment because I tried to recover and I gave some bullshit story to Adam about, like, you know, them getting it out of me. But in my head, I was like, okay, you know, that's bullshit. Adam knows it's bullshit. Now, like, Adam's no longer a number. And that's, like, another thing that could have, for me in the merge, I think if I'd been more confident in my relationship with Adam and that he really did trust me, which I think he really did, it could have really helped.
All right. I would love to get your take on the merge because I really thought that coming into the merge, I really felt like that you held all the cards of how things were going to go for original DeKalb because I felt like that, okay, Yule got voted out. Sophie's not going to like this. And we didn't really get to see any of your perspective on this in the episode. We saw that you seemed like you wanted Wendell to be the person to go out because he had a relationship with Jeremy. But we didn't hear any reaction to Yule being voted out. So you guys get to the Edge of Extinction challenge. You see Yule's on the Edge of Extinction. What are you thinking then?
I mean, I found out even earlier when I got the token, I was really bummed. And I was shocked because they just seemed to have it all set up. I remember kind of making eyes at them after we lost our first challenge against Rob to, like, please let us win. Like, you guys are fine over there. Like, it's me that's the problem sitting here. So I was definitely really pissed. And for me, that was the beginning of, like, my distrust with Wendell and Nick. And the other thing is, like, I really, on DeKalb, my closest relationship was with Yule. And I really felt like Yule owned the Wendell-Nick relationships. And I had much closer second, while that was my core alliance, the four, my relationships with Kim and Sarah were much closer than my relationships with Wendell and Nick. So I felt like once they broke that bond of Yule, I didn't really feel a need to be that close with them. And when we got to the merge, you know, they told the story, but I don't feel like they really, Nick did slightly, but I don't feel like they really made an effort to kind of come to me and say, like, it's still us. This is why. We're really sorry. And so I never got the signal from them that, like, that was anything but a representation of the fact that our alliance was no longer. So I was pissed.
What did they tell you? Did they say that it was, Yule was playing us with the fire tokens? And
honestly, I can't even remember the story, but I'm pretty sure the story was made up. It was all about fire tokens. It was all about, like, Yule trying to, like, fleece people of fire tokens. I mean, in the end of the day, what it was actually about was that Michelle, Nick, and Wendell all had stronger pregame alliances than, like, Michelle, Nick, and Yule had. At least that's, I don't know. I shouldn't speak for them. That's, like, my perception of what happened. And I think everybody was, like, kind of threatened by Yule. I wasn't threatened by Yule because I felt like Yule was, like, a coach-like figurehead. Like, he was so eager to always take control, that he was so obviously the head of things that it wasn't going to be a problem. But I'm sure that was part of why they took him out as well.
Was there a lot of talk about, Wendell and Michelle, they're an item. They're an item now. That's the new Robin Amber that they've got back together.
There definitely was talk, but I feel like it was more funny chatter. Like, we talked about it in DeCall, a little bit at the merge. I mean, I think two things. Like, one, I think it was also easier to go after them because I'd become so close with Sarah and Ben, and the three of us each had our people that we wanted to protect. Mm-hmm. And Sarah had Tony, and Ben had Denise, and I think, or Jeremy, maybe. And Adam had Denise, and, like, I had Kim. And so it just turned out that, like, it just ended up being a good match. Yeah. And we all kind of cared about that group, and we knew they would all care about each other. So I think if Yule had stayed in the game, it would have been a little trickier because I would have been like, guys, let's work with Yule. But it was hard because, like, we all wanted to work together and they all wanted to work together. So there was only so many people we could go after, and none of us wanted to go after each other. And then the other thing, the reason it ended up on Wendell, in my view, was, like, two things. One, Wendell had, like, much closer relationships with other people than Nick. Like, Nick seemed to me like very much a free agent, and Wendell and Jeremy were really close, and Wendell and Michelle were, you know, had dated. So that was one thing. And then the other thing was on DeCall, I was always less sure of Wendell than I was of Nick, and Yule was always less sure of Wendell than he was of Nick. I remember there was a lot of time spent on DeCall where Yule and I would talk about, like, do we think Wendell's playing us? Part of us really thought that Wendell was with Sandra, because Wendell and Sandra had, like, a really close kind of relationship. So I was always throughout the whole game, like, less sure of Wendell than I was of Nick. And so for me, that was, like, a no-brainer at the merge that I really wanted Wendell to go. I felt like Nick and I could salvage something.
Just to go back to you.
Maybe it comes back to that Twitter DM.
Maybe. Maybe the emoji. Wendell was one emoji short of staying in the game. When I talked to Michelle, she talked about how that voting Yule out at that spot was the biggest mistake that she made. That she felt like that Yule was, like, a really trusted ally for her. She should have kept him in the game. How do you think the merge would have gone if Yule shows up there instead of Wendell?
Oh, I think potentially really differently, because I think I would have wanted to work with Yule. Sarah really liked Yule and had a good relationship with Yule. I mean, I think it's possible that Wendell still might have gone.
He
would have been gone. Yeah. You're right. He would have been gone. Who would have gone?
Could it have been Adam?
Adam. Yeah. Adam could have been, against my own wishes, he could have been the one to be targeted. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Yule being there would have overcome the desire for, like, new DeCall and Yara to work together, but it's possible. It's really possible.
It's interesting. Okay. So at the merge, we see Denise is telling the story of idling Sandra out of the game. And we see your perspective on this. Did you feel like that the perception of Denise had changed in your mind at all?
For sure. In my mind, it had changed. And I also think if I have to, like, pinpoint all the times of my game that went wrong, I think, because that was my first introduction to Denise, was like, holy shit, you took down the queen, and in this kind of epic way. I remember having a really, like, high view of Denise throughout the entire game, feeling like Denise is somebody who can win to get to the end, which was partially because of that move, and partially because, like, Denise is just a really nice person, and I really like her. Denise really wanted to work with me. We got close, and she ended up, you know, she voted with me the night I went home. And you can see in the Ponderosa videos that we were really close. So this is like another case where my walls went up with Denise, where Denise was somebody, I think, if I'd been more willing to accept the fact that she wanted to work with me and be in my alliance, I think we could have done some damage. But instead, I formed this really close relationship with Denise. We had this one day where, like, it was, I think it was the day that Tyson went home, where we sat by the rice and, like, pretended we were detectives all day and, like, would ask people questions. And we got really, really close over the course of, like, just sitting together for these 6 hours. But I remember coming out of that and being like, Denise thinks she's tricky and she's playing me, but, like, I'm playing her. But what was actually happening was, like, we were just becoming friends.
Yeah, nobody can be friends with you, Sophie. You don't let anybody in.
I know.
It's like, I know. That was lovely. Gotta get rid of them.
That's seriously, like, my mindset the entire season.
Yeah.
And I think part of that for me was, like, Denise's move. Like, in my mind, also, I think because I wasn't there, it felt big. You know, that felt like a huge move.
Yeah. It seemed like at the merge also that you were really not doing well at that point where, you know, we go to that challenge and you are just like shaking like a leaf.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think people who go on Survivor are tough as balls, and I realize that I'm tough, but I'm not as tough as a lot of these people. And I was flipping cold and miserable. And yeah, that was a tough day for me.
Yeah. It did seem as though that you didn't miss a beat strategically. It seemed like that you were really pushing for Wendell to go home. Do you feel like that you were the loudest voice in the episode? It seemed like that you were the biggest person pushing for Wendell.
I don't know. I mean, part of me feels like, and I think that Winners at War this season was maybe unique in this way and maybe not. But in my first season, I really feel like there were people who were in charge and people who weren't in charge. And each vote, you could kind of say, this person led the vote. And I remember coming back from the season and having a friend say to me, like, did you lead any of the votes? Like, were any of them your decision? And I would argue that no one single person made the decision ever, except for maybe Tony at times. And so I felt like I was definitely loud, and I felt like, loud for me. Like, I'm somebody, I think, who often is quieter and will try to sway the vote in different ways. And that was definitely a day where I knew that Jeremy was fighting for Nick. And I knew I was, like, actively going to people and saying, Wendell, Wendell, Wendell. And Jeremy, I felt like during the day, was even doing this thing where he would go to people and say, like, it's decided, it's Nick, everybody's on board. But, like, it actually wasn't the case. Like, nobody was on board. So I felt like I was combating that all day.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the idea of anybody taking credit for anything, like, a lot of people voted Wendell in the end. I don't think it was any one person who convinced them, but I did appreciate the edit.
Yeah, I felt like that overall, up until like a certain point, like, I feel like most people were playing like pretty conservatively and pretty tight. Did you find that people were eager just to jump on a name if somebody was going to throw something out there?
Yeah, people were really wary to throw things out. And if you threw anything out, it came back to them. Like, I was throwing Tyson's name out at the merge, and I know Nick went and told Tyson. So people, I feel like there was a lot of times that people had three people that they would have been okay with going home. And so people very rarely, I think, pushed for like their ideal person. Like, it wasn't so much a Sander, as long as it's not me, but there was a little bit of like, as long as it's not hitting this kind of general realm of where I'm hoping the game's going to go, then I'm going to let this vote happen.
Okay. So you talked about how you knew Jeremy, you'd met him from Stephen's wedding. Did you have any sort of like a working relationship at all with him? This is the first time you run into him in the game.
No, first time I ran into the game, and we got off like very, very much on the wrong foot. You know, I came to the merge thinking that we were going to work together because there was this whole kind of like, keep the big threats together, keep the Dekal and Yara together. And I reunited with Kim, who, you know, had come close with Jeremy. And I don't remember the exact situations, but I remember like trying to have conversations with him the first couple days of the merge and feeling like he had absolutely no interest in working with me. And I'd be curious to know what he would say. In retrospect, I feel like it's probably to do with him getting close or previously having a relationship with Tyson and the fact that like I voted Tyson out. But I very quickly got the cold shoulder from Jeremy. And there was even like a couple of moments that like really pissed me off. Like there was a moment, I think in retrospect, that I was being gunned for maybe even more than I knew. I knew that I was a target.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeremy and Tyson threw my name out at some point, and I heard about it, but I kind of thought it was Jeremy and Tyson. I didn't know for sure. And I remember I went up to Jeremy, and this was, I think, the day after the Wendell vote, maybe, but it could have been the day of. And I said, hey, Jeremy, like, I heard my name was thrown out. Like, who threw out my name? And what was Jeremy's response? It was something that I was so angry about. It was like, don't worry about it. And I was like, no, I'm worried about it. Worried. Like, I want to know. Right. And he was like, don't worry about it. Like, not a problem. And I'm like, who the fuck are you to say not really is my name? Also, it's just like, to me, it was like an insane response. Like on Survivor, you just say, oh, I don't know, you know, but like the idea of saying like, I know, and I'm not telling you. So like, it felt to me like very antagonistic and strangely antagonistic. Cause I was like, we've met in real life. Like you would, that's not even a response you give to like a friend in real life. So I very, very quickly was like, okay, Jeremy is not on my side / she's throwing my name out. So Jeremy and I never got on the same foot, but I remember at the time thinking that it was almost useful because I felt like I had a lot of relationships with people and I liked the idea of having kind of a very public enemy. I feel like there's almost safety in that.
Yes.
When people say like, oh, but Sophie and Jeremy are going at it, right? There's that almost gives you the protection because it makes you like, oh, well, she's not liked by everybody and she has a, you know, we could always
going for me.
Jeremy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I definitely, like Jeremy, I think was almost the one person that I never had a good strategic conversation with.
Yeah. Going back to Tyson coming back from the edge of extinction, that it seems like that you probably were not thrilled that Tyson was the returnee.
I was not thrilled. As much as like I like Tyson as a friend, I had been part of his vote out and I knew he was close with Boston Rob, who I had voted out. Like, I didn't think that Tyson was coming into the game being like, got to talk to Sophie. Like, that's going to be my ally here. So I was very not thrilled. I was hoping for like Yule, obviously.
Yeah.
No, that was not a great thing. And also I think the problem there, and Kim and I talked about it a little bit on our live, is Kim and I had this relationship, but I was very wary of her new relationships with people on DeKal. And I remember never quite being sure, like, was she ditching me for Jeremy and Denise? And Tyson really had gone with that group as well.
Yeah.
And I actually think that she was prioritizing my relationship with her. And I my wall was up.
Yeah. So when Tyson comes back, the edit doesn't make it seem like Tyson is in any trouble at the merge. I think you even say at Tribal Council, like, I haven't even heard Tyson's name at all today. You said that you were actually saying it to Nick. Is that all the same vote? And then was Tyson actually in trouble at the merge?
No, he was never in trouble. I definitely would use Tyson's name as somebody, people ask me who, I would sometimes say Tyson. I feel like part of it, honestly, was just like a really human response to the edge sounded awful. Tyson had terrible stories from the edge. He seemed like really beat down. And I don't know if this was strategic on his part or not. But like, I remember at the merge feast, he barely ate. Like, we were all shoving our mouths and he was like chomping on a carrot. So he was almost, at least in my mind, like, it was almost like something pitiful about Tyson at that moment.
Yeah.
And it seemed like the edge had been really traumatic. And so I think there was an element of like, that would just be cruel to send him right back. And he also had the benefit of in many ways being the most free agent of them all. Like, even though Nick and Michelle kind of were free agents, they also already had all this baggage of the Yule vote and of being together. And so Tyson felt like just the random person in the mix, at least to me.
Okay. So Wendell is going to go home. Did you have like a game plan at this point of like what your end game was going to look like, or is this too early?
I didn't have a final three, but I had a group that I wanted to get through the game with because I felt like there were people in that group that I might be able to beat. And I felt like that there was people who were loyal in that group. So in my mind, I really truly felt like Sarah and Ben were not going to turn on me anytime soon. And I felt like Kim was not going to turn on me anytime soon. Although there is that strange Tyson vote, which we can talk about. I really wanted to move forward with Sarah and Ben and Tony by proxy, and kind of Nick by proxy as well. And there was a point in the game, especially like around the Tyson vote, where it felt like that was all coming together. And of course, when I got voted out, that was like the moment that we were really going to get the numbers. And Denise as well, kind of in that too. And of course, that all fell apart.
So you had this relationship with Sarah, who was also close with Ben. Were you concerned about the Sarah and Tony thing? It seems like the people didn't pay too much attention to the Cops R Us thing.
I was definitely concerned. You know, Sarah had always told me throughout the game, when you go, I feel like she would say when, maybe it was if, by memory, she would say when. She would say, when you go after Tony, don't tell me. Like, you got to do it without me. Mm-hmm. So I always felt like I had this kind of carte blanche from Sarah that there was going to be a moment that I was going to be able to take out Tony, and she just couldn't, she didn't want to know about it. So it was never my intention to go to the final three with him. It was always my intention to get him out. And I, you know, but I felt like I needed him to get through the game with numbers, because I felt like I had enemies in so many different people.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you say this the other day on the Instagram, or am I imagining this? That did you suppose that maybe did she have the same deal with Tony of, hey, if you vote out Sophie, I don't want to know about it?
Yeah, I kind of like, I think I did joke about that. I'm not sure. It's very possible, that she had that deal. I wouldn't bet my life on it.
Yeah. Do you suspect that conversation that plays out after you get voted out, could that have been theater?
I think there was maybe an element of theater that was very useful to Sarah's game. I think it was always useful for them to not be seen as super close.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she was pissed, and I'm sure it helped that she was pissed loudly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Sarah was not totally innocent in all of that. Like, I think a large reason why Tony voted me out, which he's, you know, texted me about, is like, he knew about my idol because Sarah had told him.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to be able to go and search that night for my idol.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get from there to from where we are now. So Adam is going to go out at this vote, and it was like so much commotion. Did you fight for Adam to stay? That it seemed like that he was at least like a chess piece for you.
I did. I did fight for Adam. I think he thinks that I didn't. I probably didn't fight very hard for him. I definitely preferred for Nick to go home that night. But also, Adam put me in a situation where, like the Tyson vote out, I felt very much on my heels. Like, I was a little bit in self-preservation mode, because Adam, you know, had people had thrown mine and Sarah's name out. Adam had, you know, rallied people around Sarah.
Right.
And I was just going off for a confessional, and Adam comes up to me and says, Sophie, I have to tell you something. This is like in this classic Adam, like, I'm going to tell people who shouldn't know kind of way. I got to tell you something. The vote's on Sarah tonight, and there's nothing you can do. The numbers are there. And then I walk off to my confessional, and I'm freaking out. And basically, I'm trying to decide, is it worth it for me to save Sarah or not? Like, I have my idol, but like, if all the numbers are there. And so I was debating, you know, whether or not I should turn it. And I honestly can't remember the whole, how the whole afternoon unfolded. My memory is that I was the one who told Sarah that like Adam was gunning for her. And the problem is that like everybody's always talking, and like there's enough people that are trying to protect other people. That I think the numbers were there for a short period.
Yeah.
But they were rallied again. And I think the problem for me was that once I was able to get it off Sarah, and I say me, I'm saying once it got off Sarah, who knows how that actually happened. It was done by painting Adam as the snake in the grass, which then made it impossible to get rid of anybody else. Like, I definitely wanted Nick, and I said Nick multiple times and rallied for Nick. But I think in the end, it was like I was going to lose either Adam or Sarah, and it probably was better to lose Adam, although maybe not.
When Sarah gave the reward to Nick, did that bother you at all?
No, not, I mean, it only bothered me because I like was so proud of all the women leading that challenge, winning that challenge, that we were going to have like a mostly women and Ben celebrate. I think Ben was on our team celebration. And instead we had like Nick there who didn't win and was just kind of like eating the food. But I think that like whole overture of kindness, I'm not sure it was going to mean much in Winners at War.
Okay. All right. So you guys are going to get to the family visit. We get to see Bobby on the screen. Very exciting.
Yeah. Bobby!
Yeah. He made a real impression on Bryce.
He's thrilled with that.
Yeah. 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 I think because he had a purple shirt. I think that appeals to Bryce.
I know. I was talking to Kim's husband and Wyatt about this recently, and they feel like they've been
objectified.
Yeah, well, I think they were excited about the objectification, to be honest. I think they were more upset with their placement and feeling like Bobby really conned the system with the blue shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart. For any future loved ones who are paying attention. I asked this with Michelle. Was it awkward at all that, you know, everybody has all these like children around? Because you were this person who, like, where, you know, Adam and Nick and Michelle, and even though Wendell's older than you, he was kind of in that group of like, oh, that's the new school, like the, you know, the young, the people who are haven't started a family yet, the young people. But here you are. And, you know, you're like age wise right in there with them, but your working relationships are all with the family crew.
Yeah, I definitely remember probably being more worried than I should have been, because people talk about their families so much when you're out there. And it was clear that people are bonding over their families. And I think probably I thought that was going to play a bigger role in choosing the winner than I think it would have actually. I think people are all gamers and they would have not voted for Jeremy because he has four kids. I certainly had that feeling when I was out there, which I think other people, you know, Michelle and people like that had as well, which is like, this is a disadvantage both in bonding and getting to the end. And I probably like overestimated that a bit. Like I remember, you know, Nick in the end, you know, alongside Tony backstabbed me. And I remember very close to my blind side, you know, Nick said something to me about like, I really want to go to the end with you. I feel like us without family is like us, the more single people have to stick together. And, you know, obviously he was not being totally truthful about that. But I just remember at the time that feeling like a pretty valid explanation. Mm-hmm. So it was certainly top of mind.
Yeah. So let's talk about this, because this was something that was very different in the edit than what we saw, because we had the family visit, we had the Edge of Extinction getting the family visit, and there's all this chaos that goes on. And when I spoke with Kim, she was able to talk about this. You guys were talking about it on Instagram the other day, but for people who may not know this backstory, can you give your perception of everything that transpired during this vote?
The Tyson vote, are you saying?
Well, where Tyson's ultimately going to go home. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like I've gotten shit about this now because I feel like maybe my recollection is not accurate. I'm not sure if that's...
From where? From Instagram the other day?
No. Well, whatever I said on Instagram was apparently untrue, or at least not somebody else's truth. So I don't know. This vote was highly...
Your version of what happened. Yeah.
I don't know. So this is my version of what happened in my memory, and... So Jeremy was going to go. We had the numbers to get rid of Jeremy. Oh my God, there's so much to happen this time. Okay, we had the numbers to get rid of Jeremy. But Ben and Tony were telling Jeremy and Kim that they were with them. So my side felt like we're going to get Jeremy out. I was convincing Sarah to use the steal a vote to make it super, super sure. And their side felt like they were going to get Sophie out because Ben and Tony were on their side. Okay. And I really trusted Ben, and I knew that Ben and Tony were telling them it was me. And I actually liked that, right? Because like I had the idol. And so I would rather have the votes go on me and know about it, because then if anything happens at tribal, I know that I should play my idol.
And who's leading the charge for you? Jeremy?
Yeah. Sorry. I need to even rewind. I can't even remember when this happened throughout the day, but you know, Kim and I had been in an alliance.
Yes.
And I remember at some point, I think it was Tony came in, or maybe it was Ben, maybe Tony and Ben, right? Because they both would have had to know who the votes were going to. They came up to me and Sarah and they said, Sophie, like Kim is gunning for you. And my mind was blown. But I was also like, I mean, this now in the context of everything I've told you about my relationship with Kim, I remember feeling like giddy and happy, not happy, but like
I knew
just,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh my God, she's finally doing it. Like this thing that I thought was fake the whole time. Like,
I
really
called it.
Fake. Yes. And I remember just like not being pissed so much as like, oh my God, it's the game on. Like, this is crazy. And then I remember, I mean, I have no linear memory of this day. So I'm going to tell you moments that I do remember. Like, I remember going with Sarah to the well with Kim and Kim being like, so who do you guys think should go? And like us all having this conversation with Sarah and I being like, this is such bullshit. Like Kim thinks she's getting us and she's not. And like Kim walking away and Sarah and I being like, this is such crap. And there was a lot that led up. The reason this all happened was twofold. One is that, you know, I think something had happened that I was not a part of where Tyson, I think, took Sarah aside and said, we should get Kim out. Kim is really strong. And to this day, I actually don't know. I'd have to ask Tyson, like, if he was serious in that to Sarah, like if he just felt like he needed to do something, or if he was trying to sow discord between like me and Sarah and Kim. Because I remember when Sarah came and told me about this, I was like, I don't know if I would trust Tyson on this. I feel like he's trying to get dirt on us to then bring back to Kim and say, look at like Sarah and Sophie are willing to go after you. So I definitely remember that Sarah then started feeling like, which I think was in the episode, let's get rid of Kim. My memory is I was like, I'm not on board with that because I don't think that Tyson and Jeremy are on board with that. Like, I think that's a ruse to get us screwed. And then what happened that day, which swayed Kim, was that Tyson and Jeremy went up to Kim and said something to Kim, like, Kim, do you have any friends in this game? And Kim was like, yeah, I'm friends with Sarah and Sophie and, you know, Jeremy and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, you're wrong. Sarah and Sophie are not your friends. And they told her this huge story about like how Sarah and like me and Sarah make fun of her behind her back. And I'm sure Tyson said that, you know, Sarah was gunning for her anyway. And so Kim like flipped a switch at that moment and was like, okay, I think this was on the episode. Yeah. Screw this. Like Sophie's going. So that's how that all happened. And Kim and I think, God, I think we talked about this on the live about like what would have happened if we'd all kind of powwowed that day instead of letting this happen. But instead, an hour before tribal, I found out Kim, one of my closest allies, is gunning for me, which I found to be also, I think the other reason I found it funny at the time was I knew that I still had the numbers. I wasn't actually scared. It was now just like, this is crazy that I'm the target and by Kim. Mm-hmm. So we went to tribal. There was a bit of a snafu before tribal because once I knew the numbers were coming after me, I started really wanting Sarah to use her steal a vote. And she was not initially planning to use it, even though it was going to expire, because I think she felt like it was unnecessary and she didn't want to use an advantage and have people think, oh, Sarah's used this advantage correctly. And that's a, you know, something for her resume.
Right.
So I was like, Sarah, the votes are coming on me. I need you to use this. She agreed to use it. And we ran back to camp to tell Ben because Sarah was really worried that Ben would feel betrayed that Sarah had not told him about this and just whipped it out of tribal at the last minute. And unfortunately, we got locked down before she was able to tell Ben. So Ben was upset when Sarah used the seal of vote and did feel blindsided. Anyway, so we get to tribal. And I have a memory of like some really fun moments between me and Kim at tribal because it was so obviously in the open. And Kim knew that like I was gunning for her side and I knew Kim was gunning for me. And we both thought we had the numbers. So there was something like really funny about the whole thing. Like we were both in really good moods. Anyway, and then Jeremy walked out, which of course threw everything into a, mm-hmm. you know, hellhole. You saw all that. I, as the one person who was getting votes, was like, okay, everybody come over here. Like I'm
Yeah, you really took charge.
Well, when you're the one on the chopping block, I wasn't going to let like some whisper right. train, you know, deal with this whole thing. And also the other thing is that for me, I thought it was going to be really valuable to have lines in the sand because I felt like I had the relationships in the majority. And I didn't want people playing both sides. I didn't want Tony being able to have a relationship with Jeremy. I wanted it to be clear that no, Tony's voting with us because I mean, I played on South Pacific. Like I'm all for a majority alliance that picks off the minority alliance. Like that's yeah. the best way to play Survivor.
Makes sense.
And so I thought that was a really great time to, you know, prove that like, hey, you guys are on the outs. So we all got in a huddle and this is where my memory gets a little foggy. People like, I remember Dalton Ross texted me after and was like, why didn't you guys split the votes properly? I honestly, if you ask me right now who voted for who, I have no memory. I do have a memory that like at some point, Sarah was the one, and this could be wrong. Sarah was the one who was like, let's bring Michelle over and get Michelle to vote with us. And I did not trust Michelle a wink. Partially because there had been this whole thing with Michelle and Jeremy earlier in the day where like Michelle had walked over to me and said, hey, we're going to go after Tyson. And I said, who said that? And she said, Jeremy. And then when I crossed the story with Jeremy, he denied it. And then Michelle came up to me and was like, I think I just misremembered and it wasn't Tyson. It was somebody else. And it was like such an obvious lie that was happening that yeah. I didn't trust Michelle at all after that. I don't understand why they tried to get away with that lie. It was crazy. Anyway, and so Michelle came over and I was very anti-Michelle getting to, because we didn't need her to be able to vote people out. And I think the other part of this, which might explain all of my like not memory about the whole thing, is that ultimately I knew the votes were coming on me and I had an idol. So I knew that, like, if Kim played her idol correctly, I would just play my idol and I would be fine. And we would re-vote and one of them would go home. So part of me, like, just didn't care that much. Like, I didn't care. I probably didn't care enough to count the splitting of the votes. I'm not sure why I didn't get split properly. Yeah. My other memory of this, which Michelle, like, disputes, which is totally possible that this is something I said to Sarah or inside my head and not to Michelle, is I remember when Michelle came over, I was, like, freaked out that she came over. And I have a memory of being like, don't tell anybody when you go back over there, or like, you're going to go, I'm going to vote you out, which I think maybe I just told Sarah, who knows. Anyway, so my memory is Michelle went back over to her group and like Tyson and Kim were trying to like ask her what had happened. And Michelle went like this because like Sarah and I had just told her like she wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, this is like, I'm sure if you talk to every single person at the tribal council, every single person has a different perception of what would have happened.
Right.
And in my mind, it's like if Michelle had talked to Kim, I would have like tried to rally the troops and get Michelle out. In Michelle's mind, if she had told Kim the proper person, they would have voted for me and get me out. In Sarah's mind, I don't know, like, you know, Denise would have gone home. Like everybody had their own, this it literally felt like, I don't know, it felt like we were in some kind of tornado. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And then it was a very dramatic night when we all got home because I was pissed still about the votes coming on me. And I was like a little hurt because Jeremy and I had met before and were friends. And so I felt like the whole like Jeremy unwilling to work with me thing the entire time was like, I don't know, I'm not hurtful, but I was just annoyed by it. And so I remember coming back to camp. I remember like very brattily like waltzing up to Jeremy and saying, so like, who did you think was going to go home, knowing that he would be really pissed to see me? And then we got into a whole tiff because he looked at me and was like, what happened? And I was like, well, no, you tell me what you thought was going to happen. And he was like, well, you know, you tell me what actually happened. And I was like, no, you tell me what you thought was going to happen. And we did that like 10 times. Anyway, it was a very dramatic night.
Yeah. Do you blame Steven that he sat you at a different table than Jeremy at his wedding, that you and Cochran were at a different table than Tyson and Jeremy and JT?
Yeah, exactly. And then Cochran didn't even play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that was probably part the largest thing that contributed to my loss.
Yeah. Let me just ask you a question. That this is, I got an email question for you from Matt Walsh, who wants to know about, as someone who previously disliked watching The Whispering at Tribal Council, can Sophie comment on what it's like to have to participate in that? Certainly something that's changed in the game since you played in South Pacific. When you're at that big Tribal Council and there's all this whispering going back and forth, did you find that productive or no?
I don't like the whispering. I'm probably not the best at taking advantage of the whispering. I think some people, I think Tony probably used it really well. I feel like he sowed a lot of worry. Like I was never one to start the whispering. I mean, I think I care about it more as a viewer, and that like tribal is fun because it's like a show and everybody's putting on their performance, and like nobody wants to go to Broadway and watch a lot of people whisper on stage. And I think it makes it really hard for the jury to interpret what's going on. Like I think the jury appreciated when I stood up because they were like, oh wow, like we can actually see what's happening in this game.
Yeah.
So I'm anti-whispering just for like a viewer standpoint.
Can they or should they shut it down? Everybody has to sit in their seat.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is it. Like we had whispering at every single tribal council this season, every single one. It was constant. It was stressful. And they didn't show it that often on the show, right? They showed a couple whisper tribal councils, but it's not like they showed everyone. So maybe in the end of the day, like maybe they don't ban it, but they don't show it as much on TV. But it's like, where does the line stop? Like, when do you, well, can you start talking when people are going to vote? Can you start talking like before the votes are read? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I like the decorum of tribal council.
I think the pendulum needs to swing back a little bit. I think we like the live tribal, but it's a little too crazy. You know, the thing that's interesting about the Jeremy thing is that, and I talked about this with Kim as well, and Michelle too, was that Jeremy is so convinced that Tony is, you know, was definitely on board with him. But Jeremy wasn't at that vote where Tony is clearly working with you guys at the tribal council. Did you feel like that you were getting too much of the blame?
I think this was like, I think in many ways, like, Jeremy was weirdly my downfall, because in my mind, after Tyson went home, the lines were so clearly drawn. I had the people who were supposed to vote with Jeremy or with Tyson's group, Ben and Tony, did not. It was clear that I knew prior to that they were not going to, because I told them all to stand up. And so in my mind, when we got back to camp, I was okay with this division. I wanted to mend my relationship with Kim, because once I learned that that was a little bit all about a misunderstanding with Tyson, like, I wanted to work with Kim. And so I tried to do that. But for me, and I liked Denise, but for me, the idea of Michelle and Jeremy being ostracized was only positive. And to me, it seemed really obvious. Like, if I was Jeremy, I'd be like, what the fuck? And very strangely, Jeremy seemed to get, like, duped by Tony into, I don't know what the yarn was that Tony, like, spun Jeremy, but why Jeremy believed it, like, baffles me. And I know Jeremy for a long time. I mean, I think Tony played him well. Like, Tony convinced him that they were buds and that, like, they were a real alliance. And I don't think Tony ever really intended. At least my perception of the game was that was never as real on Tony's side as it was on Jeremy. And so I think I was expecting to come back from that tribal with, like, the lines drawn and Jeremy and Michelle being pretty easy next couple of votes because they were so ostracized. Tony and I got into a bit of a tiff because I, like, told Michelle, I was like, yeah, this is what was going to happen. And Tony was, like, running around trying to lie to people to, like, I think mend his own double dealing. And I don't think it worked with Michelle because we were honest with her, and it certainly didn't work with Kim, but, like, somehow it worked with Jeremy.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating for me. And I remember, and this is also my bad, is at some point I was like, you know what? Tony's crazy. I'm just going to let him do his thing. I'm going to let Tony be crazy. And that was really bad decision on my part. Like, I should have continued to actively blow up his spot instead of, at some point it was like, we all decided. I remember deciding with Sarah, just being like, let's let Tony do his little, like, second grader Tony running around thing. It's not dangerous. And of course it was, like, the most dangerous thing to my game of all time.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit more that Kim had mentioned this about how there was, like, a real, like, coming together after this, where you and Sarah and Kim all got back on the same page after this vote?
Me, it was almost like the girls got back on the same page. It was me, Sarah, Kim, and Denise really did. And Sarah, Kim, and I all sat down, and we had, like, a combination strategy talk, also a combination personal talk. Because part of the reason that Kim had flipped on me was that Tyson had pulled at her, like, personal heartstrings. It wasn't that he was like, Sophie's going to win the game and is going to take you out. It was Sophie and Sarah, like, are making fun of you and don't see you as their friend. Mm-hmm. And so there was a little bit of, like, okay, let's all be honest about our relationships and, like, what's real and what's not real. And I think there was some, like, there was some honesty that came, I think, from Sarah about, like, no, I was kind of targeting you. And we definitely came back together, like, stronger than ever. And you see that because, like, you see in the next vote, you know, Kim and Denise vote with Sarah and I. Mm-hmm. That was a long night.
How did you see Kim and to a lesser extent, Denise at this point in time? Because you're talking about how you want to go to the end, probably Sarah and Ben and Tony is there part of it. Is this just another potential, exit, or did they just, like, move themselves up ahead of going out in front of, like, Jeremy and Michelle?
No, I mean, I think if I had to be honest, you know, my core alliance and who I would have wanted to go to the final three with was always Ben and Sarah. But, like, if you think of, like, an onion kind of alliance, I, you know, definitely wanted Jeremy and Michelle out. And so, you know, the more I could be allied with Kim and Denise, the better. The more that Jeremy and Michelle were truly ostracized, the better for me. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't have any strong, I always felt like I couldn't go to the end with Kim. But I didn't have any strong, like, Kim needs to go immediately. And I kind of always felt like, I think my first game, I felt like I was playing more like, I need to go to the end with coach. Like, I'm going to be coach. If I go to the end with a coach, like, it's got to be coach. And I felt like this game, I was generally this entire time, and I imagine most people were, but maybe not. I was generally, like, less focused on who to get to the end with and more just, like, how do I move a step further in the game? And I think that's partly because, like, we're all such threats. Everybody's so likable. Like, everybody had their story and their strengths. And it seemed like all you could do was focus on yourself and focus on playing a good game yourself and, like, hope that would, you know, lead to something.
Did you have any use for Nick at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, so I knew that like Nick and Tony had become close. And so I thought that Nick, Tony, myself, Sarah, and Ben were really strong. But this is like, this is the risk of relying on relationships that have relationships with other people. Is I thought, you know, Tony's not going to do anything without Sarah agreeing to it. So that means Tony's with me, which means like Nick's with me. And it's not true.
Yeah. Were you comfortable with your role as the MC of the fashion show?
You know, I was comfortable at the time. I felt like that was really a role of respect and responsibility. And I had like a big job of defining the outfits and keeping the beat of the show on track. But in retrospect, I really felt like I could have really done a great job modeling. I don't know if you saw that I was a supermodel that was kind of talked about a little bit on the show. Mm. So I do think I could have played both hats.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like you could have taken a turn and somebody else could have taken over the microphone.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah. You know what? I thought I had a little style. I had some leaves in my ear.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Did you
that
have any?
That was so fun.
Yeah.
That was so fun.
It was
Sarah's,
fun segment.
Sarah's a who.
Yeah. Did you have any sense that Tony had been extorted during that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I knew about that. I knew that it happened. And again, like, I was just like, oh, Tony's like fooling Jeremy for no good reason with all of these, like, getting his tokens. Like, that also, I think, maybe lulled me a little bit, because I was like, oh, okay, well, this makes sense why Tony would be wanting to keep this sham up with Jeremy. Like, now he has these tokens. So yeah, I heard about all that. I mean, that whole day I have so many regrets from, but
yeah. Why, what's the biggest one?
The biggest one is just like not remembering who Tony is. Like, if you had asked me going into the game, like, tell me about Tony, and then I had been, and then that person had then told me about Tony that day in the game, I would have been like, oh, I need to spend way more time with Tony all day and make sure that he's not backstabbing me. I like got too complacent about Tony, and particularly during that day, I didn't spend a ton of time with him.
Mm-hmm. At that tribal council, do you feel like, is there anything that you feel like you missed now in retrospect that seemed odd to you?
In retrospect, I'm always like, oh God, I was so close to playing the idol. I'm sure I was not. Like, I'm sure I had no idea. I mean, that day I really did have a bad feeling that I talked to Kim and Denise and Sarah about, although I had the bad feeling way before anything had actually started brewing against me. Honestly though, I feel like Jeff always asked me a lot of questions in tribal council. Like, I felt, and maybe this is wrong, but I felt from my view like I was often gone to provide perspective on, like, I don't know, the where the game was at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a couple questions that in retrospect I'm like, oh, those were the questions. But I think at the time I was like, oh, I'm just asking questions. I'm so good at answering questions.
Yeah. Do you feel like that the person who's going home gets a lot of questions at tribal council?
So I felt like going up to that point in the game, I always knew who was going home. And I remember always hearing the question and I'd be like, oh, that's the question. Like, they're asking the question that they're going to show on TV that makes them look stupid. So it was, I always felt like, oh, I'm going to know. Like, I'm going to know the moment that question gets asked, I'm going to know. And so, yeah, I feel like kind of an idiot, but
mm-hmm. Yeah. You did seem like you were truly blindsided. You did not know how to pick up the torch or where it was supposed to go. You seemed very confused by the whole experience of being voted out. It's very unfamiliar for you.
Honestly, it looked better on TV than I thought. Like, I thought I was so weirdly out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what direction to walk. I remember laughing. Like, I just think I was so shocked and I was really sad. Like, I cried a lot.
Yeah,
I think I was just trying to keep it together because I didn't want to start bawling.
At the edge of extinction, though, it seemed like that whatever you were like holding in the game, that's where it seemed like that you had. And I think this might have been a secret scene as opposed to something that was in the episode mm-hmm. of you had, you know, some emotional moments at the edge of extinction.
Very emotional moments. Yes, I was really sad, I think, because I mean, it's just like a very emotional thing to be blindsided so hard, especially to feel like you were blindsided when you were playing a good game. And I also think I had all of this like baggage and chips on my shoulder that I had about like feeling like I was a lower tier winner. And I remember coming to the edge and finding out that people like were willing to vote for me. And in the game, I always felt like an underdog and I always felt like I'm going to have to do something really big to get people to vote for me. And when I got to the edge, I realized that like maybe I actually didn't need to do something huge and that like I was playing a good game. So I think that all, you know, felt really emotional. It was, I mean, the edge sucks.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the politics of The Edge? And I know you said with Kim that you guys were able to sort of like stay above it for the most part. But could you definitely tell you were walking into, okay, this is a very tense situation?
Yes. I mean, immediately the night of, the sleeping arrangements were really strange. I can't remember exactly, but there was a lot of like where you can sleep, where you can't sleep. I remember being freezing all the first night. And then Yul took me aside the next day and like kind of said, oh, well, you know, every time somebody comes to The Edge, everybody agrees to like not be nice to them and not tell them anything. But like, I'm going to be nice to you. And then I heard from other people, oh, like Yul takes everybody aside and tells everybody this. And, like, Yul's being inauthentic. So it was like it was very obvious very quickly a lot was happening. And then the other part that I remember was that I had known about all the things coming into the game, like the Tony's disadvantage and Sarah Stilovo and Sandra's Idol. And I think it just hadn't come out in a huge conversation. At least my perception was at The Edge at that point, because I brought some of these things up and I said, guys, who's been sending them? And everybody denied. And I remember, I think it was Rob saying like, no, things aren't being sent by The Edge. Like Tony made that up. Mm-hmm. I was like, Tony did not make that up. Like I know somebody saw the paper. So it became, I feel like over the course of the day I got there and the day Kim got there, that all started coming to a head, the fact that there was a lot happening at The Edge that a lot of people didn't know about. And it all particularly came to a head in the peanut butter. It all particularly came to a head when Tyson was like out on the beach and he found a piece of paper that was one of the papers from Natalie's advantages. And he brought it back to camp and he was like, guys, what's this? Whose is this? I can't remember what advantage it was from. It might have been from the steal vote. And everybody denied it was theirs. But that became like the first piece of proof that there was actually things happening on The Edge that people didn't know about.
Yeah.
And that sent everybody off into a tizzy. And like Rob was accusing everybody and Tyson was.
Now, why did we see this?
Yeah, I mean, it was drama. And I think because, and Kim was there at this point, I think because Kim and I were new to The Edge and like not already ingrained in the politics and also had experienced all of this stuff, had been in it enough that we knew about all this stuff when we were back on the beach. Like, before I came, nobody knew about like the steal of boat or where it had come from, like all that kind of stuff. So I think once we were there, my feeling of it was like that made it, we were easy people for Natalie to get along with because she had been keeping secrets from some of her closest friends. And like 5 days left, we already knew about all this stuff. It was easier for her to talk to us, was my take on it, than to like have to admit to a lot of people that, you know, and she did admit and that pissed them off. The peanut butter wars you'd have to talk to other people about.
Yeah.
I participated only in that, like, I won peanut butter, and I probably didn't eat it far enough away from camp that pissed people off. But
yes. Well, this is a question that I had for you, because you got fire tokens. What was it? Two fire tokens for your work in the coconut challenge, where you came in just behind Natalie. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And people want to know, hey, Sophie didn't buy any advantages. What happened to Sophie's fire tokens?
You know, basically what happened, I thought about it for 24 hours. And I really, really wanted peanut butter. I was really hungry. And I knew that Tyson had gotten peanut butter. And that had been a big part of him coming back into the game, was that he had all this energy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if I was delusional, I would say, oh, I made a really calculated decision and decided that peanut butter was going to be like X times more valuable than the advantage. But I think I really just wanted to eat peanut butter and decided that there was like, who knew what the advantage was going to be? And I knew that peanut butter would also give me strength. So that was probably just a good decision. So Tyson and I both bought peanut butter with our coins.
Yes.
And then there was some drama after this because I had peanut butter and Tyson had peanut butter. I think Natalie had peanut butter from before.
Did
and
it still cost two? Or
did it cost two, so I had none left.
Okay.
I would go off. I was also just like getting down at the Edge and was like sad about the game and just, I mean, Edge sucks. And also like I wasn't part of the whole social system there. So I felt like in many ways, like I was an interloper or like a guest. And so I would go off and like slowly like lick peanut butter all day by myself. And I know that like there are people, I would get annoyed because like I know that people, like I know that Yul and maybe like Wendell were upset that some people didn't share their peanut butter. And I definitely, I shared mine with Kim, not 50-50 by any means, of course, because I had won it, but I gave her some scoops.
Did she tell you that she had just already had a bunch of peanut butter before?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But that, you know, the peanut butter doesn't stay on your lips that long. So I would share it with Kim. And I think Nat shared some of hers with Parvi and Nat shared some with me after I ate all of mine.
Yeah.
And I would get annoyed because like, I know that some people felt like I'm sharing my, you know, everybody's sharing their peanut butter with people, and some people weren't being shared with. I personally had no patience for Yule or Wendell or anybody else who had won their own tokens. Cause I was like, I made a decision to spend my tokens this way, and you also have tokens and you can make the same decision. So you don't get to have your cake and you can eat it too. But that was very mild peanut butter drama, I think, compared to everything that had happened prior at the Edge.
Yeah. Sophie, I feel like you have such a great mind for all of this that I would love to get your take on the fire tokens and just as a general, what could they do to improve them? Because I feel like that inside the game that they really did not amount to much of anything.
Yeah, that's true. I remember inside the game immediately thinking, well, maybe we're going to win fire tokens in the reward challenges. And it's going to have to be this entire season. We're going to have to be making decisions like you would in a board game about how do I spend these fire tokens?
Yeah.
And what's more important? I don't know. Do I spend them to take somebody on a date and eat food with them? Or do I save them for an advantage in the challenge? Or do I save them and 10 fire tokens equals a vote at the end of the game? So I thought there was going to be a lot more decision making about the fire tokens. I feel like they were so rarely in play. You only had one, and then maybe you would get another one. I thought they were going to be a bigger part. I mean, I like them when it comes to the Edge. I thought they played a huge role on the Edge and on the drama of the Edge, because nobody had anything to think about other than fire tokens. And I appreciated that there was this Edge game bartering. I think it could have even been better if we'd known that that was existing. For instance, in the game, you could buy a letter to send to the Edge with fire tokens. And we were all why would we want to write to the Edge? What are we going to do? Say hi. But if we'd known that they were sending things over, maybe we would have, written and said, I'll get 10 fire tokens if you send me something. So, and I like that they made the Edge more relevant in the game. And I think that because of that, I, for one, if that had not been the case, I would never vote for somebody from the Edge to win the game. Mm-hmm. As hard as it is and as tough as it is, I think it's not Survivor. I was very willing to vote for Natalie under the right circumstances, because I felt these were the rules of the game, and she crushed these new rules at the Edge. So I at least liked that they made the Edge more relevant. Mm-hmm. I think there's more they could do with them.
Yeah. So did you try to twist Cochran's arm to play? Was there any persuasion on your part?
No, I didn't even try. I didn't think that was going to work. I don't know if it would have been good or bad. It would have been fun. It would have been really fun to play with Cochran. And I think he would have added a lot to the season. Although, to be honest, I think Adam was one of the most enjoyable people to watch on the show.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Cochran had made the show, if they would have not included Adam.
Yeah, I think he took a spot.
And then we would have never had, the podium moment, which is one of the greatest moments in Survivor history.
Did you have any sense from Adam that that was a possibility in all of his conversations with you?
No, but I knew that he had shared Denise's idol. So I knew that he knew what the idol looked like, which was also interesting on Yara, because I was pretending that I didn't know that it was a split idol. And so he kept saying, Sarah and Ben have it. And I'd be like, well, why would they both have it? Why would they tell each other? Which I think also helped him believe that I had no idea what it was doing. So when he went over to the podium, I definitely for a moment was like, oh my God, he could be right. Because I knew that it was going to be a fear to, I knew about the fear to leave thing, and the fear to leave was on the podium. But I didn't know he was going to do it. I have a different memory, which shows how poor my memory is. I thought that he said, I want to play this. And then I thought Jeff said to him something like, you want to play this podium? You want to play my podium as an idol? And he's like, yes, I'd like to play the podium. But anyway, mm-hmm. I mean, Adam was great in this season. He was so fun to watch.
Yeah, he was. He brought a lot to the table.
Yeah. Sophie. Also, Adam, I think, is a great player that I think I underestimated when I was out there, because he was always scrapping from the bottom. But Adam played harder than I think a lot of people in the season played. Adam, if I think about the few moments during the season when I was playing both sides and worried about it and trying to balance them, Adam was trying to do that constantly, which had he been successful would have been an incredible feat.
Yeah. I think that the degree of difficulty of game that he was trying to play was probably harder than what anybody else was attempting to do.
I agree. And I think he had to do it because he wasn't able to play another way. He had to do that way.
Right.
I mean, He was playing hard.
And he's somebody else who came into the season with sort of this idea of like, hey, as one of the, you know, I'm a lower tier winner. Yeah. So I need, if I'm going to win this game, I need to
I need to win big.
Is that something that you can speak to now? Like, did you sort of like, is it like the Wizard of Oz where you realize that like, oh, like I didn't need to go back to Survivor to prove that I'm not a lower tier winner at all. I could have done it. It was in me the whole time.
I think I personally like have never thought of myself as a lower tier winner. I think I more think that's very much the public perception as me. Mm-hmm. I also recognize that like my game in Survivor South Pacific was like not only boring, but was very basic and was not, not half the game that like, Parvati has played in the past and other people have played in the past. But like my general feelings coming out of Winners at War is that it's almost like, I don't even know if you can rank the players and say who's a better player than anyone else. I feel like it's like soccer players, and there's, depending on the game that you're playing and the situation, it's like, you know, Zidane is really gonna, I don't know, flourish because he's going to be able to take control, or like, you know, Tony's going to be like, sometimes like Ronaldinho can do amazing things on the pitch and like sometimes he can't. And I felt like playing with the Winners at War, it was like, we were all playing at like a major league soccer level. And it's just a matter of like, you could put us all there 30 times over and 30 different people would win. And I think everybody proved that they have some superpower and some strength that makes them lethal under the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's true in every season of Survivor. I think a lot of seasons of Survivor, I can tell you a lot of people from my first season of Survivor, I'm like, ain't got it.
Did
I don't
not have
think
a
you're
superpower.
Gonna,
yeah.
Yeah. Like Semhar, like how many times has Semhar played win? I'm not sure. But this season, like,
but her superpower is poetry. So that, yeah, that spoken word. Yeah.
Everybody had it. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it. And so I feel like I more came to terms with like, obviously I'm happy that I got an edit and that like the internet seems to adore me as a goddess, which feels like only, you know, accurate.
Yes.
Mostly I feel like I took away from it that like all this like upper tier, lower tier stuff is bullshit. And I hope that it's not talked about ever again in another season. Mm-hmm. Because everybody plays the game differently. And that can turn out different ways.
Sophia, I would love to get your take on the conversation that was had with Lacina at the final six tribal council about gender bias, potentially in the way that people view female winners of Survivor. Did you feel I would just love to get your take on that in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, what Sarah was saying, because I thought it was an interesting discussion and different than the one that we've had mostly about the show where, oh, this advantage is unfair to women, or mm-hmm. that this rule change is unfair to women. But she was talking about how women are perceived by the jury.
Yeah. So it was funny. On the ride out to that tribal council, on the boat from Ponderosa, was it Ponderosa? Yeah, we're already at Ponderosa. I was sitting next to Adam. And this is partly why you see, I think in the show, you see me and Adam like kind of talking a bit during the show. Yeah. On the boat ride out, I remember saying to Adam, like, hey, Adam, I think there's like something sexist going on with Sarah in this game. Like, she was not getting, there was a lot of chatter at the edge and at Ponderosa that like, Sarah wasn't a good player. People wouldn't vote for Sarah. There was a lot of like slightly like Hillary Clinton-esque, she's unlikable without a great explanation why.
Yeah.
And I remember Adam had a very brief conversation where I was like, I can't put my finger on it, but something's weird. Anyways, that's why I was like getting all riled up during that. Cause I was like, yes, there totally is something happening. Okay. I think the Sarah thing is also very complicated. And I think that it is, I think the sexism on Survivor is complicated and can't be described easily. I do think that Sarah's right, that there are some things that like men can kind of get away with more and women cannot. I think what was happening with Sarah was like slightly even more complicated than that. I think there was an element of that. But I think the other part of it is that one of the things that people I think didn't like about Sarah and turned them off is she like wanted to have it two ways sometimes. Like she wanted to be the badass But she also like felt really guilty about it. And you saw it in secret scenes, like her and Kim and her crying about like Game Changers and what it did to her. And I think that some of the people on the jury found that difficult to palate. It's like either be a badass and screw people over or don't, but like, don't be a badass and screw people over. And then also want people's like pity and forgiveness about it. And my take on that is that's reasonable. I understand somebody being like, no, don't, I don't want to have to also comfort you when you're crying if you're going to screw me over. My take on it was that like, that is also very gendered. Because I think that the reason that Sarah felt the need to constantly apologize and constantly maintain her friendships and feel guilty is because like that is what society has expected of her and her entire life. And that like women are expected to like be kinder and keep relationships and not screw people over. And so I think that Sarah, like when she would do that, would then feel guilty about it, partially because like that's how she's been conditioned to feel her entire life. Mm-hmm. And then that would make the jury upset. So I think she was suffering from two things. Like I think she was definitely like, the same moves that she made that Tony made, people didn't appreciate or respect as much in Sarah. And then I also think because Sarah like holds a lot of this like guilt that I think is very gender driven, that also turned people off.
So if you watch the Ponderosa videos, I don't know how much you went back and watched them. There's a scene that after that tribal council, when Denise gets voted out, it seems like that this debate has spilled over back into Ponderosa. And it seems like that there's a conversation that's happening that it seems like that Nick is saying that, hey,
that's the weirdest scene.
It seemed like that he's trying to argue that like, well, how could there be some sort of a difference in the perception between men and women? Because, hey, Sophie, didn't I vote you out? How come I don't get credit for that? Because I'm a man. Shouldn't I get credit for it if I'm a man? Was that the conversation that was being had?
I think that was. My strongest memory of that night was that people were really awful to Denise. Like people yelled at Denise for
Why?
No good reason. I think people, the tribal before where she was like kind of pretending about being worried about going home. I think also it was like the culmination of like, everybody was bitter. We were finally back at Ponderosa. And I think when people came to the edge, it was like, okay, they're one of us now. Like we all came to the edge. Now we all have to suck on the edge. The people who came post edge, it was like, they didn't have to deal with the edge. And so there was almost like more of an othership towards them. And people were really awful to Denise. That said, the thing you're saying about Nick, you know what? It's making me realize that there's like a small point in what Nick is saying. But I think that Nick is right. That like, why didn't he get as much credit as Tony did? I definitely felt more betrayed by Tony. That's because I had a close relationship with Tony. But let's just say that like Nick should have gotten the same amount of credit. I think part of the reason he didn't get a lot of credit is like Tony came in with this big, I'm Tony, like, I deserve credit because I'm Tony. And if I do anything, it's amazing. And Nick came in with the, like, I'm a hyena. And I think everybody was like trying to, all the hyenas had to overcome that. Like anything like a big person in the game did, it was like, oh, Jeremy's being Jeremy. And like, it was harder for, I think, the hyenas to get that respect. I think that is one example of like what it's like for women on the show at all times.
Sure.
That it is. The men in the show tend to get to be those lions, and they do something and it's incredible. And the women do something and it's like, they have to be a Denise and get Sandra out or else the credit's given other ways. And so I think Nick was honestly maybe experiencing what Sarah experiences through much of the game. And he was the woman in that relationship with Tony.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that like, wasn't it Tony's idea? Like I can understand if it was Nick's idea and Tony just went along.
Tony's idea. Tony's the one who really like betrayed Sarah, his closest ally. I was a lot closer to Tony.
Yeah.
Tony's the one with the Jeremy relationship. Yeah. I mean, it was a bit of an insane comment, but that's my only way to rationalize it.
It seemed like that you did enjoy your time at Ponderosa before you got sick though.
I did. I got a couple of massages. I mean, like I love like Denise and Kim. I think they're just amazing people. So it was fun hanging out with them. I'm kind of sad about getting sick at Ponderosa because I do think there's this element when the game ends of everybody kind of like takes off their mask and there's a bit of like, like we're all close.
Yeah.
And I really didn't get to have that moment because I was sick. And so there's people that I never really feel like I got to meet as a real human. Mm-hmm. Like Michelle, even Ben, I find it weird that like we were so close, but I never really got to see him much at Ponderosa because I was so sick. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Ponderosa was a hoot.
Yeah. Sophie, are you retired from Survivor at this point?
Sorry, I haven't had lunch. Is this like a major faux pas what I'm doing? It probably is. I'm really sorry.
And Sophie, that if it was anybody else, I would say something.
You know what? It's bullshit because Coach did a whole podcast on a treadmill.
Did a whole podcast on a bite of a sandwich. And this is why you're a goddess on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Shit, what was the question? God, it was a good question.
Would you play Survivor or are you retired?
I told myself on day 5, like, what the hell am I doing out here? This is like the stupidest, worst experience of my life. Like, this is miserable. Why does anybody do this? But Survivor is always that thing where, like, later you're like, oh, what if I could I have? So, I mean, I feel like I would need a couple of years of like a good flush of the system, but I'm not sure I'm yet at the Boston Rob, hanging up my hat phase. Although I find it unlikely I would be asked back. But,
yes. Yeah. If you were out there, you're saying you wouldn't be singing the plane song on day 4.
No, I think if you're singing the plane song on day 4, like, it's time to retire now.
Yeah, you shouldn't come back. Yeah. No, I really think that you increased your chances. Like, I think it was, it's more likely that you get called back after this season.
Well, we'll see.
And hoping also, I mean, you are in a good spot in that you played and won so young. And you are like, I think that you have still a good, like, 15, 20 years of Survivor playing time.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'll hit Tyson's career
days.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly.
His record.
I mean, Tyson considers it his full-time job. I don't think I'm there yet.
Not there yet. Okay. Outside of Survivor, what are you up to?
I'm loving Santa Monica, my new home. LA is great. It's a great place to be quarantined.
Do you think we'll ever hang out sometime once social distancing has come to an end? Do you think that will ever happen?
I hope so. I'm really sad that we're not doing this in person. Yes. I remember you feel like you did a podcast with Cochran once in person, like on a lawn.
Twice.
And twice. Yeah, that was great. I'm hoping to do that before I leave LA at some point. I don't have any plans to leave LA, but I have a puppy. That's my big news. Her name is Eleanor. She's the sweetest. Eleanor Bruff.
Yes. What's puppyhood been like?
So part of the problem is that my husband, Bobby, you guys all know his name, and I got COVID in March.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. So I was traveling to Germany for work in early March, and he came with me. And then we were in New York for a week. And we were in New York the week that everything started kind of shutting down. And so we cut our trip early and flew back to LA. And about 4 days after I returned home, I had high fever and throwing up and the whole thing. And then he got it a couple of days later. And we weren't able to get tests because it was like at the time they were not really testing anybody. But I got an antibody test a couple of weeks ago and it was positive. Anyways, all that to say that one of the biggest symptoms we had of COVID was we both lost our taste and our smell for like 3 weeks, like a really long time. And it was right about the time we got the puppy. And so the problem was we couldn't really smell all of the bad things the puppy was doing. Yeah. You know, like, we later found out that maybe she had peed in places that we didn't expect and her poop smells worse than we knew and her food smells worse than we knew. And we also have this like dog trainer who's taken over our life, but otherwise, you know, she's adorable. Yeah. The dog trainer, though, told us that it's the most scared puppy she's ever met in her life. She's a very, very nervous puppy, which is kind of nice because it means she just like wants to be between my legs all the time.
Yeah. Is she a rescue?
She's a rescue. Yeah. She's 50% 50% German Shepherd, 10% Chow, 10% Pitbull, 10% Australian Cattle Dog, and then like super mutt, whatever that means.
Yeah. Sophia, I always love to hear from you in terms of what are you watching on television?
Okay. So first of all, I'm watching all of the Netflix shows. Love is Blind, Too Hot to Handle, The Circle.
Okay, good. I'm glad you watched Too Hot to Handle. We did podcasts. I remember before this all went down, I went to the movies. I was in Sonic the Hedgehog, and I got a text from you that said, are you podcasting Love is Blind? And I wrote back, no, is it good? Should I watch it? And then I never heard anything.
Did you watch it?
No, I think I put it on one episode.
That was great. I mean, I thought Too Hot to Handle was really good too. I mean, I think Netflix has this formula down. I did just see there's a reunion for Too Hot to Handle that I'm excited about. So watching those, I started the Michael Jordan documentary, watching that. mostly I'm just like hoping that I'm hoping Big Brother is going to be on this summer. Like, yeah. It seems like you can think about any show on, like, wouldn't that be, honestly, like if we're quarantined for the next 4 months, what could there be a better time to get the feeds?
Yeah.
Can't think of it.
Imagine how frustrating it would be if you're one of these people that was on The Amazing Race 32 and it's like, it's sat in the can forever. And now you're just like, okay, this is it. Put it on now. Put it on now. I'll be huge. And like, nah, well, let's wait. We can wait a few more months.
And they probably filmed that like 8 years ago or something.
Yeah. Clothes will be all out of style. It'll be it'll be great. It'll be a time capsule piece.
Anyway. I'm really sad about Survivor. I really hope they're able to get on the air in the fall.
Yes. Well, Jeff, were you surprised that Jeff said that they were committed to being on the air in the fall?
I know. That did seem surprising. I wonder if they're going to figure out some way to film in the U.S. or something.
That's what I've been pushing for. I don't know if you've heard my idea for domestic Survivor Wild Wild West, Sophie.
I mean, I think that's great. I mean, they could do it on the CBS lot, too. You know, they put some sand down and God, that would be the worst Survivor of all time. I'm also curious about this whole, like, teenagers please apply thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know what they're doing.
Would you let
that.
Your 16-year-old son go on Survivor?
I mean, I would not want them to do it, but if I don't know, I feel like that
it was
I
their
might,
life goal.
I feel like I might like have a little bit more. Like I would tell like a normal parent, what do you need this aggravation for? But I kind of feel like that if anybody was going to do it, I feel like that at least I sort of like know. The production people to some degree of like, okay, well, please take care of my kid.
Rob, how do you think your kids are going to do against the other Rob's kids in Survivor Season 40, The Next Generation?
I don't know.
Bobby said Rob's kids were really smart.
Yeah. They seem, and they're already making fire. So I think that the Mariano family tradition will continue against the Sesternino family.
Okay. They're a clear threat, especially because that fire was online. Like that's going to be shown as, you know, footage and
well Sophie, is there anything else that you want to say? I feel like that this was so incredible.
God, is there anything else I want to say? No, I mean, I had a lot of fun playing. I felt like this season was one of the best seasons of all time, at least to play. It felt like we were making great TV, so I hope everybody liked it. And for me, it was like, as a fan, I said before the game started that I felt like I was playing with the Avengers, and I still feel like that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like everybody who played our season should like leave with their head held high that like, and, you know, Michelle getting no votes at the end, I think was no representation of like Michelle's play. And you know, Sarah's play, like everybody was just on point. And like, it felt like that when we were out there, it felt like everybody was playing really hard. And I appreciate the internet. Thank you for being kind and not saying nasty things like you did last time.
Yeah. Was this a better experience for you than South Pacific?
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, I think part of it is like, I got a better edit. So people were nicer, but I also just think the internet's become a nicer place. Like I think in 2011, I think definitely 2011 Instagram, I think maybe wasn't there, but Twitter was around. And I think there just wasn't as much of a culture around what was okay to say and what was not okay. It was still like dominated by like nasty trolls on forums, and like Survivor Sucks was the big like place people would talk about Survivor, which is just a cesspool anyway. And so I feel like now there's this whole like anti-bullying culture online and cancel culture. So I mean, while I did get some weird, I got some weird messages. Somebody called me a meninist, C-U-N-T. But other than that, like people were very kind.
Wow. Sophie, this was the hottest take of the whole interview, that the internet is a nicer place in 2020 than it was in 2011.
I mean, I think so. Or I got a lot of messages saying that I glowed up. So, or people are just nicer to you.
People are nicer.
They think you're more attractive. That's also a possibility.
Okay. Sophie, this was so much fun to get to catch up with you. I know you have almost no social media footprint now.
I'm on Instagram.
Instagram.
Twitter, honestly, I had to get rid of it because it was a big source of like my anxiety and depression after the first time on Survivor. And so, I mean, the thing with Instagram is like, I have a full piece of sandwich in my mouth now.
You're fine.
The thing with Instagram is like, you seek out what you want to see. Or even like reading Survivor Reddit, like you can choose, am I going to go to Survivor Reddit and read about myself or not? And the problem with Twitter I found is like, things get pushed at you. People can just tag you and it like shows up in your face. And sometimes I don't want to see that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I got rid of Twitter for that reason. I felt like it was, you know, like I didn't get enough control over what I wanted to see and not see. I'm excited though. Like, you know, I barely listened to any, I'm sorry. I'm sure you did amazing podcasting this season. I listened to almost none of it other than like Bobby. Mm-hmm. Cause I found it all to be really stressful, but I'm looking forward to when I'm like 45 and wanting to relive the glory days and getting to listen back to all of it.
Oh, very nice. That'll be fun. Sophie, how soon after you got back did you and Bobby have your wedding?
Oh, like, I don't know, 6 weeks.
Six weeks.
Gained like 30 pounds in 2 weeks. And then I tried to lose a lot of it. It was quite a tumultuous time there. But yeah, about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Were you sort of checked out when you came back mentally? How was that in preparing for the wedding?
I feel like I was out of it. And at the time I felt like, oh, no, I'm normal. But looking back, like I was getting in weird fights with my family and like really having problems not putting the Oreos down. And I think basically I managed to like kind of hold it together up to the wedding and then the honeymoon. And then I was like, oh my God, I need a break. So I kind of like took off some time off work after we got married and just moved to LA and slowed down and took a breather. But Survivor's a lot.
Okay. It is a lot. It is a lot. But I appreciate you sharing your whole experience here. And yeah. I know that the listeners really appreciate it too. Follow Sophie on Instagram. Are you on Cameo? Will that happen?
I'm not on Cameo. But, you know, maybe one day.
Okay. All right. Well, Sophie, best to you and Bobby and Eleanor. And thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Rob. This has been really cathartic. I've enjoyed this.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
All right. How fun was that, everybody? Sophie Clark here on the podcast. There you have it. Anyway, so that was a treat for me, and hopefully it was for you. It was. Come on. Admit it. All right. And I'm sorry to the person that recaps the interviews on Reddit. I hope I wasn't coming across too hard. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. Thank you very much for that. I hope I get a good edit in the recap. Anyway, so that's going to do it here for us. We've still got a lot going on this weekend. Of course, Renap, special know-it-alls with Steven. Gonna do a wiggle room coming up on Monday. News AF, talking with T-Bird, much more. We'll see if we get our next interview lined up sometime soon. Of course, all this podcasting made possible by the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. You can find out about everything that's going on in our patron community. By the way, in addition to, I've heard from people they've been enjoying the podcast, but you don't even know the half of it if you're not a patron, because I have also done, get this, 7.5 hours of patron podcasts over these last couple of days. And that doesn't even include patron trivia on Monday night. Altogether, at least 9 hours of patron content has been dropped this week as well. That's what you get when you're a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. If you're thinking about getting on board, here's another tip. Wait till Monday, because that's the start of the month, because I don't want you to get double charged, because that's what they'll do over on Patreon if you sign up at the end. That's a pro tip, okay? Anyway, thank you so much for listening. robhasawebsite.com/patron if you want to find out more about everything that's going on in our patron community. Our Facebook groups and everything else are very active talking about all these, and we have I wouldn't say recaps, but definitely lots of commentary on these interviews, and we do post a link there to if you people want to go back and find the interviews as well. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. These are so much fun. I am not losing any enthusiasm for doing these interviews. If anything, I'm getting more fun as we're going through it. Also, by the way, Big Brother fans, check out the Big Brother 4 blockumentary. Taryn Armstrong and Mary Kwiatkowski also going through Big Brother 4 on the Butt First blockumentary series up on robhasawebsite.com for you Big Brother fans. Have a great weekend, everybody. Take care. Bye.